equal higher food prices. And see, this is one of the things. We've been getting away with for so long not actually paying for what we use. Virtually everything's been subsidized in one way or another. And one of the biggest problems was the externalizing of
This is the Quality News Network. In Iraq today, a tanker carrying chlorine gas with a bomb on board exploded outside of a restaurant. At least 6 people were killed and 105 were injured or sickened by the toxic fumes. In Baghdad today, a suicide bomber attacked a funeral procession, killing at least 7 people. 11 other people were killed in a suicide car bomb attack also in Baghdad. The U.S. military said today an American soldier died Sunday from a non-battle-related cause. That brings the U.S. death toll in the Iraq War to at least 3,144. A report by the Inspector General of the Justice Department says the department and the FBI often used inaccurate terrorism statistics to point out successes in the war on terror. The report described the collection of statistics as, quote, decentralized and haphazard. A federal appeals court ruled today that Guantanamo Bay detainees cannot challenge their detention in U.S. civilian courts. This ruling upholds a key aspect of President Bush's anti-terrorism policy. In eastern Afghanistan today, 6 NATO troops were wounded as they tried to stop a suicide bomber from striking a hospital. A New York man who faces charges of helping terrorists in Afghanistan has in the past given $15,000 to Republican organizations. He pleaded not guilty in U.S. District Court. In Washington, D.C., President Bush today swore in the new Director of National Intelligence, Vice Admiral Mike McConnell. He's the nation's second DNI and replaces John Negroponte, who left to become Deputy Secretary of State. At the CIA leak trial of Lewis Scooter Libby today, closing arguments were presented. Prosecutors said Libby, the former chief of staff to Vice President Dick Cheney, concocted an implausible story. His defense attorneys responded that because of so many memory failures, it is unfair to convict Libby. In the West Bank today, 3 American women were kidnapped briefly, then released. It has become routine for foreigners in the West Bank to be taken by various Palestinian groups, then released a few hours later, unharmed. Israel warned today that if Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas goes ahead with plans to form a new unity government with Hamas, Israel would stop dealing with him. Last fall, California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger authorized the Corrections Department to send inmates to private prisons in other states as a way to deal with California's overcrowded prisons. Today, a state judge ruled that plan is illegal. You are listening to the Quality News Network.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to RightCarRightPrice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to RightCarRightPrice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
JetBlue Airways faces $30 million in losses because of the recent passenger delays, which left some travelers stuck on the tarmac for more than 10 hours during last week's snowstorm at New York's JFK Airport. The CEO of the company said passengers would be reimbursed for those delays. After yesterday's announcement of a proposed merger between XM and Sirius Satellite Radio, questions remain about whether the $13 billion deal will win federal regulatory approval. The Warner Music Group has made a another takeover bid for the British music company, the EMI Group. There have been four previous merger attempts which failed in the past 7 years. Today, the U.S. Supreme Court threw out a nearly $80 million verdict against a smoker's widow. The punitive damages award against Philip Morris USA was rejected because the jury was not properly instructed. Home Depot says its fourth quarter profit fell 28%. The new CEO repeated again that his company will focus on improving customer service and its retail stores. Tesla Motors, an all-electric car manufacturer, has chosen Santa Fe as the site for its auto assembly line. Light sweet crude is trading at $58.07 a barrel. And at the close of Wall Street today, the Dow had another record high close, up 19 points at 12,786. The NASDAQ was up 17, the S&P 500 up 4. There's more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Allie Dramoff.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America.
Now, Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Well, we've made it another... Look, do you remember... I'm Bob Kincaid. You know, about half-addled. No, do you remember, a month or so ago when it was getting a little weird up in the hills and hollers of West Virginia, and I was telling you about the attack group training exercises taking place running up our little mountain gorge not too far from our home? Remember that? Well, I hate being... And look, there's no crystal ball involved. There's no palantir, if you will. I have a sneaking suspicion that a lot of the people who throughout time have been called, ooh, prophets, you know, ooh, he's got the magic eight ball. These are people who just have an ability to look at circumstances as they are and see how they will extrapolate. So, at any rate, we saw a month and a half ago, U.S. attack aircraft flying at supersonic speeds, popping out of our little mountain gorge and then over top of our house at, you know, window-rattling altitudes and speeds. And it was really creepy, and it scared the bejesus out of our children. And I said there and then that I had gone and looked on Google Earth trying to find anything that had topography that remotely resembled where we just happened to live. And I found it. And I found it in Iran. Well, from the BBC today, we have a story headlined, U.S.-Iran Attack Plans Revealed. It opens thusly, U.S. contingency plans for airstrikes on Iran extend beyond nuclear sites and include most of the country's military infrastructure, the BBC has learned. It is understood that any such attack, if ordered, would target Iranian air bases, naval bases, missile facilities, and command and control centers. Don't worry, that's as much as I'm going to read to you. You can go and do it for yourself. I'm sure you're every bit as good at it as I am. I don't like to just sit there and read. However, there's one little bit more that you should hear. Now, please remember that I noted a month and a half ago or so that one of the places that would be a likely target that just happened to sit on topography reasonably similar to that where we live, which would make where we live a nice practice bombing run. You know, just practicing. It was a place called Arak, A-R-A-K. Well, these words are also included in the BBC story. Diplomatic sources have told the BBC that as a fallback plan, senior officials at Central Command in Florida have already selected their target sets inside Iran. That list includes Iran's uranium enrichment plant at Natanz, facilities at Isfahan, oh, there it is, Arak, and Bushehr are also on the target list, the sources say. I wish I had been wrong a month and a half ago. I sincerely wish I had been wrong. I wasn't. They're going to ramp themselves up a nice little war. You can tell it later on in the article. Okay, I'm reading to you after all. A very disturbing little sentence. You know, they blah, blah, blah. They're trying to get them to quit making the nuclear bomb that they say that they're not making. And God only knows why anyone would be afraid of Iran with one nuke when Israel's sitting there with 100 or 1,000. And there's India and there's Pakistan. And, you know, doesn't make much sense. However, and please hear this and bear it in mind. You know, this is serious stuff. But bear in mind these words when you consider the QNN top of the hour news that reported that a tanker truck of chlorine gas with explosives attached had been detonated in Baghdad today, sickening a lot of people. Chlorine's not particularly good for you. That's why you never use the ammonia and the chlorine together when you're scrubbing out the bathtub. This paragraph. Alternatively, our correspondent adds a high casualty attack on U.S. forces in neighboring Iraq could also trigger a bombing campaign if it were traced directly back to Tehran. Got that? If it were traced directly back to Tehran. And, of course, who does the tracing? Who declares that it's been directly traced? Who comes out and says, this has Iranian fingerprints all over it? Who would do that? Who would provide him the information? Might it be the same inept, so we are told, dishonest crowd that told him that we were trying that, oh, I don't know, that there was a yellow birthday cake and some uranium involved and the candles were the aluminum tubes and it turned out to be weather balloons and the, ladies and Colin Powell at the UN say, ladies and gentlemen, this is not speculation. These are facts. Look at this photo behind that palm tree over there next to the camel dung. That is a mobile weapons laboratory. No, it wasn't. Yeah, the same guys. The same guys that created all the stinking, filthy, dirty, rotten, homicidal lies that led to the debacle in Iraq. Well, you know, George is tired of that. You know, the Iraq toy isn't fun anymore. He wants something new to bomb. He needs a new war. So you see things like a high casualty attack on U.S. forces in neighboring Iraq could also trigger a bombing campaign if it were traced directly back to Tehran. Anybody want to bet? Take a wager. Fox News, a poison gas bomb detonated in Baghdad today. Iranian agents strongly suspected of having a hand in it. The BBC story contains a photograph of the USS John C. Stennis, which is at present under sail, seam, fissionable material, what the hell ever, to the Persian Gulf. Be afraid, America. Be very afraid. Not of some guy in a turban 8,000 miles away. No, no, no. Sad to say, the terrorist, well, you already know this, lives in your own midst. He lives at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, and he's looking for a reason to start slaughtering Iranians. I saw a film slideshow that was accompanied by the music from Cat Stevens' song, I think, Peace Train. And it was just pictures of everyday life in Tehran. And, you know, they may believe stuff that you or I think is bizarre. But by the same token, I also think that eating a cracker and believing it turns into Jesus meat is pretty bizarre, too. So, you know, you really can't hold that against them, and you especially can't hold it against the children, because the children will be slaughtered. The children will be slaughtered. And old men and little old ladies will be slaughtered, and they have nothing in this fight. Let's go to the phones. We're joined by our good friend Sam Simpson.
Hey, Bob.
Sam. Good to talk to you. How are you?
Well, you know, I'm doing okay. I'm calling because I got a message from Phil Restino, our friend mm-hmm. in Daytona, with the vets, and I had recently written a blog and sent it out on the dangers of this, you know, strike on Iran. And he suggested I give you guys a call and just sort of, you know, continue to sound the alarm, especially for people that don't really have an idea of what's going on. And even if people do, things happen at such a quick pace, and everybody's so overwhelmed, but this is the time for the American people to truly just stand up and holler and, you know, swamp their congressmen and their senators and say, no, 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 don't bomb Iran.
Well, I agree with you wholeheartedly. Do you think that, are we so dim, Sam, that we would fall for this same line of caca again?
I don't think that people, like the media, for example, they're asking a few more questions, you know, than what they used to do. You and I obviously aren't going to fall for it, but I went into my plumber the other day, right? And I had to buy some material, and I asked him, you know, do you know what's going on? You know, do you know we're spending $11 million an hour in Iraq? And he said, the news is so bad. He said, I can't even watch anything anymore. And I really think that's the danger. People are so overwhelmed with fear and terror and just the constant hum and drum of the war machine that they've turned off. And it's exactly the opposite of what we need to do. You know, we need to turn on. I don't think people will fall for it if we get the alarm out.
And how? So you mentioned you're doing some blogging now that the political campaign's over. Where are you blogging? What are you writing?
I am writing, for example, I'll read you a little bit of it. Well, what triggered this particular one was the other night I watched a movie called The Color of Paradise, which is by an Iranian filmmaker. It was made back in 1999, and it's an amazing story that just shows the absolute beauty and wonder of Iran. It's a beautiful country. Flowering fields and wheat and I mean just mountainous sides and villages. It's absolutely gorgeous.
Yes.
And you know, and so I was, and this movie that when I first saw it 7 or 8 years ago, I just wept. It was just so beautiful. So I decided to watch it again, and it just began to terrify me to think of that beautiful piece of earth devastated by, you know, imperialistic mayhem. And, you know, one of the first clues, I mean, obviously, if you look back with, you know, PNAC, and one of the things Phil wanted me to mention on the radio was that there is a video available online. You don't have to buy it. You can just watch it. Called, the Catastrophic Hijacking Catastrophe.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody Google that. Hijacking Catastrophe, that will really go back into the annals of history with the Project for the New American Century, you know, and the rise of the neoconservatives, and of course, you know, the Likud. I don't think it goes into the Likud party, but I mean, we have a convergence here of terror, really. Terror and error is what I call it. I don't call it a war on terror. I call it a tragedy of errors. But what's happening is, you know, they're pushing, and the neoconservatives have been salivating over this land for a long time. And they're like dogs, and they want in, and they want geopolitical positioning, and they want that oil. Today on Democracy Now!, I would encourage people to watch that online. Democracy Now! Today had another interview about this new oil law in Iraq and how that's positioning, you know, the Shells and the Chevrons to come in and take these production sharing agreements. And, you know, they're getting closer to what they originally invaded. But now with Iran, when you've got William Fallon, who is a naval commander, as head of CENTCOM, and you've got two battle groups over there with extra Patriot missiles, minesweepers, they're all in the Straits of Hormuz.
Right.
The airstrike in Iran, according to a Kuwaiti-based Arab Times editor, said that it's going to take place before April 2007. And when we go back and we just, like, you know, this continuing rhetoric of, you know, Iranian weapons are supplying here and this. I mean, it is the same old. And, of course, what they're going to do is they're not going to do a ground war because they don't have any troops. You know, they're going to rain terror from the sky.
Right. Well, they're going to try to accomplish what was, by my way of thinking, for ill accomplished in Kosovo and Yugoslavia, and that is to just bomb them into submission. But I think it's a wildly different scenario there.
Oh.
This story that I'm reading from the BBC this evening is particularly disturbing to me because it looks to me that by including this second casus belli for attacking Iran, to wit, what they're calling a catastrophic attack in Iraq that has Iranian fingerprints on it, it looks to me like the Bush administration, Sam, has recognized that they cannot unilaterally. Should also be a little bit inspiring, because that means it is possible to make this kind of stuff either stop or not happen.
Yes, it is. I really believe that we are on the cusp of life. I mean, we're on the cusp of, you know, I don't even have a word for it. But every single person listening to your program has got to call their senator or their congressman. And they have to, or they have to go visit their offices, or they have to flood their mailbox, but they have to say no to war with Iran. The answer is no. Now, I know there is some talk. I believe Biden was going to be working on some kind of resolution to take away some of that power from the original resolution, which gives Bush way too much power. And there also is talk with the Libby trial coming out. I saw a lot of impeach Cheney first stickers, which I actually,
yeah.
I changed on the back of my car. I took off impeach Bush to impeach Cheney. Makes much more sense.
Well, in the long run, I think you get a twofer.
Right, exactly. But, you know, let's talk about nuclear weapons for a second. Let's talk about what Bush
sure.
is saying. He's saying that Iran, you know, is developing nuclear weapons. Number one, they have said they're doing it for energy. The International Atomic Energy Commission, now, we don't have all the information. But the Washington Post had an article a year ago that declared the National Intelligence Estimate said in 2005, if Iran is working toward a nuclear weapon, they wouldn't have it until 2015.
Right. They are 10 years out. The IAEA confirmed that.
Yes.
Less than 4 or 5 months ago. The IAEA had to come out, Sam, and correct a right-wing, you know, just one of these crazed Republican reports that came out in the last days of the Republican Congress screaming about enriched uranium and so forth. Iran is nowhere near able to enrich uranium to the level of even you know, one bomb.
No.
And the question I continue to ask, and I've asked it repeatedly on this program, and I'd like your thoughts on this. If you look at the map, Sam, and you take into account that there's Israel, and this is not a pro-Israel or anti-Israel the scenario. It's just a statement of fact. There sits Israel with no less than 100 and possibly as many as 1,000 nuclear weapons. Okay? There sits Pakistan with a nuclear arsenal of considerable substance, and there sits India with a nuclear arsenal of considerable substance, and we're worrying about the Iranians getting one?
Exactly. It's illogical, and that's not the reason why we're going after them. We're going after them because of imperialism and greed and oil and holding on to that power and holding on to that land because we don't want China and we don't want India to have control over that oil. Now, Iran happens to have a treaty with China, you know, and with Russia and with Venezuela. You know, the idea of the it's imperialistic greed. That's what it is. This is not about nuclear weapons. We have 10,000 nuclear weapons. And this is also about foreign policy that is beneficial for Israel. That's what they say, although it seems to me our attack on Iran is going to put Israel in a much worse position. But
well, I can't help but wonder, I was aware of, and you mentioned the treaty between China and Iran. Yes. Do we know what that treaty says?
Well, I can search for it while I'm here at my computer.
If we attack Iran, what kind of position does that put China in?
Right. Okay.
Has anybody thought this? I've repeatedly made the statement that in many instances I think these goons are playing chess checkers while the rest of the world is playing chess. I mean, have they thought three moves out on what happens after the bombs start raining on Iran?
There have been some folks who have theorized, you know, that our nation will be crippled because there will be a return of fire, whether that's naval ships going down or whether that's oil fields, you know, oil processing or them shutting everything down, shutting down the Straits of Hormuz, where we get 40% of our oil. You know, I mean, I'm buying some rice and peanut butter and honey and water. You know, I mean, this is insanity. So
yeah, it is. And with that proposed date of April 2007, that makes a lot of sense, Sam, because this is when they like to roll their new wars out.
Yes.
If you recall in the run-up to the Iraq War, when Karl Rove was terrifying the Congress and terrifying the electorate, I forget which Bush administration wingnut said, but it was said, you don't roll out a new product in August.
Right, I remember that.
I mean, these people think about war as merchandise.
They absolutely do. They're militaristic, they're megalomaniac, and they're messianic. I happen to Google last night. I went to Frontline, you know, the PBS television program.
Oh, yeah.
Watch them online. And I watched a couple of their episodes. They're fantastic. One was The Jesus Factor with George Bush, and mm-hmm. one was The Lost Year with Paul Bremer, who made every possible error, but it was Rumsfeld more than Bremer's fault, really. I mean, they're both, and he got the Medal of Honor. I can't even believe it.
Well, somebody's got to tell me what he did with the $9 billion in cash. I'd kind of like to know that.
He doesn't even know. I mean, and, oh my goodness, I have to tell you this. I got to go to a couple of hearings when I was in Washington, and I got to hear Zbigniew Brzezinski speak to the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, who was talking about the manipulation that led up to the war in Iraq, and talking about the hubris and what was going to happen, and it could be catastrophic for the United States, warning the senators. He said Congress needs to act and stop this. So he's a lot smarter than I am. So there...
Well, I think you're absolutely right in your assertion, your thesis, if you will, that it is up to us to contact our members of Congress,
yes.
our elected representatives, to let them know that we are absolutely unaccepting of this, that they're and to cogently and without sounding strident point out the good reasons for not doing it, for not believing any of this garbage, but at the same time, I got to tell you, I'm a little nervous. Because when Mrs. Clinton comes out and you know she's got to wave the tattered flag, and apparently everybody else does, because you cannot, and it's so heartrending to me, Sam. Apparently we've reached a place in this country where you cannot become president of the United States on a notion that peace is good.
Do you know that Richard Nixon? I went back and I watched the State of the Union, C-SPAN. I think it's one of their oldest ones. Richard Nixon's State of the Union back in 1974. And he said, without peace, there can be no security. That's what he said, without peace. His whole thing was peace. He'd opened up China. He'd gone to Russia. Now, he got impeached, or almost got impeached, had to resign. I didn't like him at the time. But here it is, 2006, and I'm or 2007, and I'm watching Nixon on television in 1974 talking about clean air, clean water, our grandchildren, securing peace. So our culture has changed.
Isn't it amazing that a man like George W. Bush could be the one who rehabilitates Richard Nixon?
That's incredible. I know. It blew my mind. It blew my mind. So the people who are, I want to say, logical and sane, like us, we have to almost sound, in a sense, we're like Jeremiah out there. You know, like Isaiah. Stop it! Stop it! So, you know, the Iran, Ahmadinejad, with all of his verbal language, he doesn't make the final decisions in that country. And they have elections there. And there are people that are disquieted with him in their own regime, you know, in their own country. Let them develop as they develop. And we have to, I mean, let's talk to one another. Good heavens. You know, so anyway, I just called to sound an alarm and let people know this could be imminent. This is not a joke.
No, it is not. Sam, yeah. I really are you okay? I mean, I've thought a lot about you since you were on the show and since you ran the campaign, and what a wonderful campaign you did run. Aww. Are you doing all right?
Well, you know, I slept a lot, you know. I'm honestly grieving in my soul for this country. You know, I'm grieving in my soul. I don't know how else to describe it. I mean, I'm sleeping and eating. I'm a human being, and I'm, you know, looking for work and figuring out, you know, what's the next step. You know, what should I do? But I'm astounded that I'm alive in this point of history, and I have a voice, and I want to use it, and I want to encourage other people to use their voices. There were 500,000 people in Washington D.C. marching against this war. I'm doing a little documentary about that, and I'll get it online, and I'll call you when I have it online.
Oh, I hope you will. And let me just say, Sam, that you are welcome at this program anytime you want.
Oh.
Please, you know, we have created the Head On Radio Network as a sounding board and as a springboard for ideas, for things that really matter in America: peace, workers' rights,
yes,
the rights of real American family values,
yes,
and you know, you talk those kind of things, and I hope you will just consider that there is an open door for you here anytime the bug bites.
That is so kind of you, Bob. Well, I want to give a shout out to Phil Rossino. He called.
He's waiting. He's on hold.
Oh, is he?
He's hearing
wonderful.
Every word
Good.
You're saying.
Well, he said hijacking catastrophe, and I googled it and I found it, and I'm going to watch it tonight. Because really, this all does go back to 9/11 and the PNAC, and you know, these plans have been around for a long time.
Yeah.
And we're going to stop this madness, and we're going to take our country back. So sound the alarm. God bless you, Bob. And
thank you, Sam. Blessings upon you as well. And again, I hope we hear from you again very, very soon.
Okay, you take care. Thanks so much.
All right, bye now.
Bye-bye.
For those of you who weren't listening back during the congressional 2006 congressional election, Sam ran for Congress down in Florida, and she ran a wonderful campaign and was decent about it and gave a lot of people down there a lot of hope, and I hope she doesn't give up the idea of trying to take her intelligent, strong, impassioned voice to Washington and represent the people who, God knows, need some real representation. We will take a break now. When we come back, your phone calls are more than welcome. I would like to know if you do indeed believe that some sort of sleazy attack on Iran is imminent. And more than that, I would like to know if you are willing to do what it takes to stand up and be counted and add your voice to the voice of others in opposing this hatefulness. The phone number is 877-443-2366, 877-4, head on. You can reach me via email at bob@headonradio.com. This is the Head On Radio Network. We'll be right back.
Some The United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competency and training. UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business anytime and every time. It's their job to provide manpower. They build partnerships based on respect and trust. They provide skilled, responsible millwrights and carpenters to meet the challenge of any project because they believe and what they're doing and are so very committed to getting each and every job done right. They include a clause in your contract that eliminates work slowdown and jurisdictional disputes because they believe that, as professionals, they can discuss and solve any problem while keeping your project on target on time. We'd like to take this opportunity to thank the men and women of the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights for building the American dream and saving the American dream. Thank you.
As I understand the conflict right now between the president's bill and the one supported by the Democrats, John McCain and Lindsey Graham, is that John McCain and Lindsey Graham and the Democrats say that the bill, the standards we use, should be the standards that are the same as the treaty we signed, the Geneva Convention signed after World War II that every civilized nation follows. And the president is saying, that restricts me too much. That's too humane. I want to be able to do other things. I won't say what they are, but sources tell us that things like waterboarding, you know, drowning people, putting them in 50-degree weather. And the question, I think, is should we hold the United States to the same standards that England holds itself to, that Canada holds itself to, that other civilized nations hold themselves to?
Get the view from inside the Beltway with Mark Levine on the Radio Inside Scoop. Right here, 2 to 3 p.m. weekdays on the Head On Radio Network.
Howdy, this is Baxter Black. And if you're like me, you're concerned that the environment we enjoy today may not be around for our children and grandchildren. All the new technology in the world can't create more sky over our heads or new oceans. The Earth's natural resources, fresh water, land, and even the air we breathe, are limited. Voluntary family planning improves the health of women and their children. It also helps slow population growth, which is good for our planet. So help ensure that people everywhere have access to the information and services they need to plan their families and help build a healthy future for us all. Population Action International is working to promote voluntary family planning around the world. Visit us at www.populationaction.org. That's populationaction.org.
I'm not sure I could. They say time heals everything, but I'm still waiting. I'm through with doubt. There's nothing left for me to figure out. I've paid price, and I'll keep paying. I'm not ready to make nice. I'm not ready to back down. Still mad as hell, and I don't have time to go round and round and round. It's too late to make it right. I probably wouldn't if I could, cause I'm mad as hell. Can't bring myself to do what it is you think I should. I know.
All right, welcome back. Thanks for sticking around. This is Head On for a Tuesday night. I'm Bob Kincaid. We'll go right back to the phones. You heard Sam Simpson mention Phil Restino of Veterans for Peace down in Central Florida. He's with us now. Phil, you kind of had to cut short last night at the end of the program. Glad to have you back.
Thank you, Bob. And thanks, Sam, for getting on the phone and calling in. I cannot echo enough the sense of urgency we have here. We have a third carrier group that left at least 2 weeks ago on the way to
the John C. Stennis.
There you go. You were mentioning in the beginning of the program. And folks, we know what it is. We know it's time to act. And damn it, it hasn't happened yet. And everyone listening, if you don't give it a try, if you don't try to stop this, and it happens, you knew. You knew and you didn't act. And I want to say that, and then you have some of the blood on your hands, because you're informed now. Hijacking Catastrophe, go to the website, hijackingcatastrophe.org, and I'll email that to Susan or Agnes so you can put it up on the website.
Okay.
And here's what we do, folks. Pay attention. We call them, we order the DVD, and they also have flyers on how to promote it. And then we open the yellow pages or blue pages, get the phone number for your public library, and you say, well, you want to show the film. And you make arrangements to show the film at your public library. They have the equipment. They have the DVD player. And, you know, if you want to do a nonprofit, tell them you're a member of Code Pink. You're a member if
okay.
you say you're a member. Code Pink is a nonprofit, or Vets for Peace, or and you get this thing shown. You invite your congressman. He'll probably, he or she will most likely not come, but they are home this week. And
right.
then you copy it to your local newspaper and your local media, and you know, with the flyer that you print up to advertise this film. And you get out there, you give an hour on a street corner handing these flyers out, you give an hour to print the flyers up, and you give an hour to call your media and in public, you know, invite the congressman, and you damn it, you turn the TV off. The average American household watches 4.83 hours of television per day, and you give up one of those. You give up three of those 4.8 hours and do something. And if you don't, this blood is on your hands. This is happening.
Well, that, you know, we cannot reiterate that enough, Phil. Mm-hmm. I get the sense, just from the email that I read, the phone calls that I get, that there is a concern in the progressive and the liberal community that regardless of what we do, they're going to do what they want to do.
And that's...
Okay? And that is a very, very, I think it's been cultivated, and it's a very
yes.
defeating attitude. It is defeating to anybody who thinks that activism matters and wants to be a part of the process. And we must act as though that does not exist, because you are so right. The information is in our hands. We know what they plan to do. We know they plan to do it as early as possibly April. We know how they plan to do it. Thanks to this BBC report, we know where they plan to drop the bombs. We know what their intentions are. And if we do not, Phil,
yes,
take action to stop it, we are complicit.
And you're guilty. In my opinion, you're guilty. If you don't try, if you don't take one night of television watching and put it into to your local effort, well, you mentioned Sam Simpson's run for Congress, and if you folks don't think that making some noise and getting active in your own community doesn't have an effect, we have a Republican governor in the state of Florida who is now talking about having paper trails on the voting machines. And I guarantee you, if Sam Simpson runs again and we have fair elections, she's in there. You know, I hope you heard that, Sam. But what I'm saying is, April, I this can happen any day. Brzezinski's saying it. Scott Ritter's out there sounding the alarm. Ray McGovern, Larry Johnson, all the, you know, the foreign press, April's, I would not count on it. I would treat this like it can happen this week, and it could very well happen this week, especially that people are getting hip to it.
Well, did you catch, Phil, did you catch that news story about the chlorine tanker going off in Baghdad today?
Yes.
Well, that's a poison gas bomb, Phil.
Yes.
I know how these people work.
Yes, and if you folks don't believe in false flag attacks, man, wake the heck up, you know, because that's how these things, these guys are trying everything. And whether this is logical or illogical, forget about it. Just accept the fact that these insane people are in charge, Cheney being the top dog. And the PNAC plan is still in effect, you know, and everything is on time. You know, all this sideshow stuff, you know, the Iraq escalation, and you know, forget about it, man. We're talking about these guys are going to attack Iran, and there's a good chance they're going to use nukes. And if you folks can't give up 3 hours to try to make a difference here, in my opinion, the blood is on your hands, because you know you heard it tonight. You heard Sam Simpson, you heard Bob at the beginning of the show, the BBC report, and you're listening to me, and I'm saying we have to act like this thing's going to happen this week, because it very well may happen this week as people are getting hip to it. And you call your public library. You go to hijackingcatastrophe.org. There's an 800 number on there. You call them tomorrow. You say, I want to get this film shown in my public library. And then you say, and I also want your pre-printed flyers so I don't have to make it up myself. And you call your library, and if they don't have evening hours, ask them if they could show it. That's what we did in Daytona Beach. You know, they said, well, we're closed after 5. And I said, well, people work. Is it possible that you keep it open late for us? And they said, yeah. You don't know. They can't say yes unless you ask. And then you call your media and you invite them. You say, this is a film about the lies about Iraq and the same lies, the same people telling the same lies to attack Iran. And it's a must-see for everyone. You invite your congressmen. They won't come, but you're on record for inviting them, and you tell the media that you invited them. And you put them on the spot for not showing. And, of course, call your congressmen. And there's three bills. Sam mentioned 770, you know, H.R. 770. Barbara Lee put that one out. Also,
right.
Republican Walter Jones from North Carolina, H.J. Res, you know, 14. And then Senator Byrd from your state, right? He's got one, S-39. And you can see all these on the afterdowningstreet.org website. And you call your congressperson and you tell them you know that they're going for Iran, you don't want it, and you want them to sign on to these legislations.
Well, you know, Sam mentioned something. She said that, you know, they don't have the troops to do it, so they can't have a ground war in Iran.
Yeah.
So they'll try to do it by, you know, from the air. And there's truth in that, but somewhere down the line, and this has to be borne in mind by anybody, right or left, considering this war, it may very well, if they get away with it, somewhere down the line, it's going to require ground troops. Because the Iranians, the minute the bombs start falling, the Iranians are going to pour across the Iraqi border, and they're going to slaughter our people there.
We're talking about a slaughter, Bob, whether it comes from the air or ground troops or whatever. The point of this is we've got to do everything possible to not get it started. And they have got...
I'm not disagreeing with you,
yeah.
Phil. I understand that completely.
Yes.
But the idea that this will not involve ground troops... is a little bit of...
illogical.
It's illogical, and I think it's something that the Bush administration is counting on. The fact is it will involve ground troops, and it will involve ground troops that might be 12 years old right now.
Anyone that has a brain can figure that out. These guys are insane. Cheney is insane. The PNAC guys are insane. The whole idea
they started the Iraq War, Phil, and they don't intend to have it end until the next before the end of Bush's presidency.
Iran was always on the plan, Bob. If you look at the
I know it was, and that's the thing. They'll start Iran so that the next president can't pull the plug on the plan either.
Yes, and it's not about politics. You know, politics is maybe a consideration, but this is more about natural resources and having a, you know, changing the world. You know, whether or not Republicans in Congress, you know, in power the next time, these guys don't. That's secondary. These guys.
What I'm trying to point out here, Phil, is that there was a mistake made the last time, as the neocons see it. These murderers, these killers, these slaughterers of innocents. They made a mistake, and they, in their eyes, and they're trying to act to keep it from happening again. They got the war they wanted in the first Gulf War with Bush, but they couldn't keep it going long enough
right.
to force whoever followed Bush one. They hoped he would be reelected, but when he wasn't, they weren't in a position to continue active warfare,
right.
and that upset them. They are trying to create a situation now, Phil, and I think it is very, very important that we comprehend this.
Yes.
They are trying to create a situation in which the war that they start, namely Iraq, and the next war will be carried over de facto.
Yes,
okay?
I agree.
As a matter of course, it will have to be carried on by the next president. Those are the stakes that we're dealing with.
We're talking about continuous war. Chalmers Johnson has been sounding the alarm about this. But folks, it's a time to act. You know, we can talk about this and intellectualize it, but damn it, we've got to get out there. We've got to turn the TV off and give up, you know, one night's worth of television or even one night's worth of listening to progressive radio, I hate to say it, and get out there and put in 3 or 4 hours and act in your community and force your local media to cover this. You know, hound them, force your local. You'd be surprised what one person can do. You know, we keep surprising ourselves down here in Daytona Beach, just because we turned the TV off and actually tried it, you know, actually just walked through the motions and actually do it. Now we have media calling us, you know, where we used to have to chase them down. This is serious business.
Well, you're inspiring me, Phil. I've got a very dear friend that I grew up with who is an employee down at the local public library. Maybe I'll have to get one of those going here.
I hope you do, Bob, because it's a matter of a phone call or two. It's a matter of, you know, calling. Get on the web to again, folks, hijackingcatastrophe.org. And the reason why I say this, film, because it outs these guys and their plan. And Iran was always in the plan. Iraq was not a mistake. It was not incompetence. They wanted a quagmire in Iraq. It's deliberate. Iraq, you know, they got us talking about, oh, they're stupid, they wouldn't listen. This has always been about a permanent presence in Iraq, you know, and they have all the permanent bases, the airstrips, you know, they're enriching their fellows, you know, and as you read earlier today, Sam mentioned it, you know, now they it's official, they opened up Iraq's oil resources to the private Western oil companies. None of this is a mistake. None of this is incompetence. This is deliberate, and they're on plan, and Iran is part of the plan, and it's next, and it could happen this week. We have to treat it that way. People, hijackingcatastrophe.org, ask them for the flyers and how to get it in your, it's even in a theater version, Bob. People can call if there's independent movie theaters in their town or somewhere around them. Put them in touch with this group, Media Education Foundation. See if you can work out a deal where they'll show it in the independent theater, because it's released in.
This website format. Will certainly, or this this web address will certainly go up on our site.
Yes.
We will brood it about as loud and as far as we can. Phil, we've got to run because we're at the top of the hour.
Thank you for the time, Bob.
Thank you for your passion. Thank you for your commitment. Thank you for what you do. And thank you for shining a light in the darkness that others can follow, Phil.
Okay, well, let's get out and do it, folks.
All right,
act.
Good deal.
Act.
Phil.
Thank you.
Bye now.
Bye, Bob. Thanks again.
Yes, indeed. our good friend Phil Restino in Daytona Beach, Florida, co-chair of Central Florida Veterans for Peace. And there's no better recipe than what he just said. Act. Because at this point, silence becomes consent. Are you willing to remain silent? If you're not, say so. Let the whole world hear it. You know how you can do that? You can do some of the things that Phil was talking about. You can also be heard right here, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, Head On. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid.
The peace we'll make when someday we walk like Him. God forgive our war and way. Jesus tried to give us sight, for to see wrong from right. Jesus tried, but Jesus failed. God forgive our war and way. Bless the poorest of the poor, sea to sea and door to door. Let the millionaires atone. God forgive our warring way.
This is the Quality News Network. There's more bloodshed in Iraq today. As if to defy the joint U.S.-Iraqi security crackdown, a tanker carrying chlorine gas and a bomb was detonated outside a Baghdad restaurant. At least 6 people were killed. More than 100 others suffered from toxic gas given off by the explosion. Elsewhere in Baghdad, a suicide bomber attacked a funeral procession, killing at least 7 people. 11 others were killed in a separate car bomb attack. A federal court of appeals ruled today that foreign-born Guantanamo Bay detainees cannot challenge their detention in U.S. courts. The ruling is seen as a victory for the Bush administration. It's upholding a key aspect of the president's anti-terrorism policy. And a report by the Inspector General of the Justice Department says the department and the FBI often used inaccurate terrorism statistics to point out successes in the war on terror. On the Afghan-Pakistani border today, 6 NATO troops were wounded as they tried to stop a suicide bomber from striking a hospital. And a New York man who faces charges of helping terrorists in Afghanistan has, in the past, given $15,000 to Republican organizations. He pleaded not guilty in U.S. District Court on Friday. In Washington, D.C., President Bush today swore in the new Director of National Intelligence, Vice Admiral Mike McConnell. The 40-year veteran of intelligence work will head up 16 of the nation's agencies. He replaces John Negroponte, who left to become Deputy Secretary of State. In Mexico, the country's president is offering a 50% increase in wages for police. Those officers are at the forefront of Mexico's newest battle to stamp out the drug trade. The president says a bigger paycheck will help police officers resist bribes and other corruption. In the West Bank today, 3 American women were kidnapped briefly, then released. They were not harmed. And Iran's president remains defiant in the face of tomorrow's UN Security Council deadline to halt his country's nuclear program. He says Western nations should also shut down their nuclear programs. The White House dismissed his proposal. And in India, the death toll from Sunday evening's train bomb blast and fire is now at 68. Indian police released sketches today of 2 male suspects. You're listening to Quality News Network. More coming up.
Run for your lives. The lenders are coming. They're in the mailbox. They're overloading your email. They're on the phone. They won't be denied. The best rate, the biggest bargain, fewer points, too much information. Gold Coast Financial to the rescue. They can offload the overload and handcraft a loan that suits your needs. Are you on lender overload? Relief is just minutes away. Call Gold Coast Financial, 831-649-8757. 831-649-8757. Gold Coast Financial.
Hi, I'm Anthony, owner of the Duplication Connection, and I want to help you grow your business. At the Duplication Connection, we specialize in CD and DVD duplication in quantities from 1 to 1 million. If your company needs mass quantities of CDs or DVDs, you can now use us as one of your primary marketing tools. Thousands of our customers have depended on our fast turnaround and superior quality product for almost 20 years, and so will you. Please call us at 831-373-0493 or visit our website at www.duplicationconnection.com.
In Egypt today, archaeologists unveiled ancient tombs that may be more than 3,000 years old. Egypt's antiquities chief says this is just the tip of what lies undiscovered in the area. Those tombs were discovered last week. JetBlue Airways faces $30 million in losses because of recent passenger delays. Snowstorms last week left some travelers trapped in planes on the tarmac for more than 10 hours. The CEO of the company said passengers would be reimbursed for those delays. Hewlett-Packard's first quarter profit jumped 26%. The company reported higher sales of laptops, printers, and lots of sales over the holiday season. After yesterday's announcement of a proposed merger between XM and Sirius Satellite Radio, questions remain about whether the $13 billion deal will win federal regulatory approval. The Warner Music Group has made another takeover bid for the British music company, the EMI Group. There have been four previous merger attempts in the past 7 years. And at the close of Wall Street today, the Dow had another record high close, up 19 points at 12,786. The NASDAQ was up 17 points at 2513. The S&P 500 was up 4 at 1459. And, of course, there's more news at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Laurel Crisson.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Darn right. I'm Bob Kincaid. We are in our second hour, and we got off to a roaring start in the first one. Let's stay with the theme we have working right now, and I know I'm gonna do something that I sort of said I wouldn't. I'm gonna read, and this is a little bit of an extended read. I've mentioned this book in the past, because this is so perfectly in line with what we're talking about. I understand that immediate action is necessary, but it's also good to have, you know me, I'm the perspective guy. So this is perspective, a marvelous book out called Persian Fire. The author is Tom Holland. It is subtitled The First World Empire and the Battle for the West. And it concerns the Persian invasion of Greece in the late 400s BC. And I just want to share with you how Tom Holland prefaces the book. In the summer of 2001, a friend of mine was appointed the head of a school history department. Among the many decisions he had to take before the start of the new term in September, one was particularly pressing. For as long as anyone could remember, students in their final year had been obliged to study a special paper devoted to the rise of Hitler. Now, with my friend's promotion, the winds of change were set to blow. Hitler, he suggested to his new colleagues, should be toppled and replaced with a very different topic of study, the Crusades. Howls of anguish greeted this radical proposal. What, my friend's colleagues demanded, was the point of studying a period so alien and remote from contemporary concerns? When my friend countered by suggesting that history students might benefit from studying a topic that did not relate exclusively to 20th century dictators, the indignation only swelled. Totalitarianism, the other teachers argued, was a living theme in a way that the Crusades could never be. The hatreds of Islam and Christendom, of East and West, where was the possible relevance in these? The answer, of course, came a few weeks later on September 11th, when 19 hijackers incinerated themselves and thousands of others in the cause of some decidedly medieval grievances. The Crusades, in the opinion of Osama bin Laden at any rate, had never ended. It should not be hidden from you, he had warned the Muslim world back in 1996, that the people of Islam have always suffered from aggression, iniquity, and injustice imposed on them by the Zionist Crusaders Alliance. Menacingly proficient at explaining the modern world of air flight and mass communications, he may be. But bin Laden has long interpreted the present in the light of the Middle Ages. In his manifestos, past and present tend to merge as though one. Blood-curdling abuse of the crimes of America or Israel will mingle with demands for the restoration of Muslim rule of Spain or of the medieval caliphate. No wonder that when President Bush chose in an unguarded moment to describe his administration's war on terrorism as a quote-unquote crusade, his advisors begged him never to use the fateful word again. That an American president might be less au fait with the subtleties of medieval history than a Saudi fanatic is hardly surprising, of course. Why do they hate us? In the days and weeks that followed September 11th, President Bush was not the only one to wrestle with that question. Newspapers everywhere were filled with pundits attempting to explain Muslim resentment of the West, whether by tracing its origins back to the vagaries of recent American foreign policy or further to the carve-up of the Middle East by the European colonial powers, or even following the bin Laden analysis back to its starting point to the Crusades themselves. Here, in the notion that the first great crisis of the 20th century could possibly have emerged from a swirl of confused and ancient hatreds, lay a pointed irony. Globalization was supposed to have brought about the end of history, yet it appeared instead to be rousing any number of unwelcome phantoms from their ancestral resting places. For decades, the East, against which the West had defined itself, was communist. Nowadays, as it always used to be, long before the Russian Revolution, it is Islamic. The war in Iraq, the rise of anti-immigrant and specifically anti-Muslim feeling across Europe, the question of whether Turkey should be allowed into the EU, all these have combined with the attacks of September 11th to foster an agonized consciousness of the fault line that divides the Christian West from the Islamic East. That civilizations are doomed to clash in the new century, as both Al-Qaeda terrorists and Harvard academics have variously argued, remains as yet a controversial thesis. What cannot be disputed, however, is the degree to which different cultures in Europe and the Muslim world, at any rate, are currently being obliged to examine the very foundations of their identities. The difference of East and West, thought Edward Gibbon, is arbitrary and shifts round the globe, yet that it exists, that East is East and West, is easily history's most abiding assumption. Older by far than the Crusades, older than Islam, older than Christianity, its pedigree is so venerable that it reaches back almost 2,500 years. Why do they hate us? It was with this question that history itself was born. For it was in the conflict between East and West that the world's first historian, back in the 5th century B.C., discovered his life's work, his life work's theme. His name was Herodotus. As a Greek from what is now the Turkish resort of Bodrum, but was then known as Halicarnassus, he had grown up on the very margin of Asia. Why, he wondered, did the peoples of East and West find it so hard to live in peace? The answer appeared superficially a simple one. Asiatics, Herodotus reported, saw Europe as a place irreconcilably alien. And so it is, he said, that they believe that Greeks will always be their enemies. But why this fracture had opened in the first place was, Herodotus acknowledged, a puzzle. Perhaps the kidnapping of a princess or two by Greek pirates had been to blame, or the burning of Troy. Quote, that at any rate is what many nations of Asia argue, but who can say for sure if they're right? As Herodotus well knew, the world was an infinite place, and one man's truth might easily be another's lie. Yet if the origins of the conflict between East and West appeared lost in myth, then not so its effects. These had been made all too recently and tragically clear. Difference had bred suspicion, and suspicion had bred war. A war, at the time, like no other. You see, way back when, 490 B.C. or so, or let's say B.C.E., before the Common Era, the great and rising power in that corner of the world was Persia. And it was headed by Cyrus, and then by Darius, and then by his son Xerxes. And they rolled across what is now the Middle East, and Egypt, and Turkey, and crushed everything in their wake. And they imposed what might have been called back then, or what we might now look back and call, a new world order, in which all the world bent a frail knee to the Persian king. Persia was, in point of fact, the world's first superpower. It was impossible to contend that any nation, that any group of people might stand against such a tremendous amount of might. And it proved true that no one could until Marathon, the Battle of Marathon. And the Battle of Marathon was followed by the heroic stand of Leonidas and 300 Spartan soldiers in the pass at Thermopylae. After Thermopylae, there was the naval battle at Salamis, followed by the mopping up job at Plataea. And the next thing you know, the great Persian Empire lay in ruins. And less than 100 years later, well, a little more than 100 years later, Alexander II of Macedon would sweep across Persia, destroy Susa, destroy Persepolis, destroy Ecbatana, and drive the great king of Persia to his death, haunted, hunted, and thirsty. And the thing we have to understand here is that we are looking at the exact reverse. There is no one on earth who can stand against the United States. Oh, sure, there's the Sunnis and the Shia, but they can't even get together in Iraq. They can't oppose us. They can't defeat us. Those Iranians, they can't defeat us. So it was said of the ancient Persian Empire. I mean, look at ancient Greece. The Spartans hated the Athenians. The Megarans hated the Spartans and the Athenians, but paid tribute to the Spartans. Then there were the Corinthians, the Thebans, the Thessalians, the Argives, and nobody liked each other. They barely spoke to one another. But with sufficient pressure, they were brought together, and they destroyed the greatest power the world has ever known. Sound familiar? Perhaps not. How many Americans, and I know a lot of you know this story, and you know this history, but how many Americans do? I would hazard a guess that neither the names Cyrus, nor Darius, nor Xerxes, nor Alexander, nor Xanthippus, nor Leonidas, Themistocles, Aristides, Demaratus. None of those names have ever been heard by anyone who graduates from the high school up in the community where we live in West Virginia. But it's not just us. It's all over this country. It is the perspective that we lack and we so desperately need. George Bush started this war in Iraq, and I'm not tooting my own trumpet. I'm blessed, lucky. I don't care what kind of vocabulary you want to use to describe it. I am fortunate. I'm grateful for the fact that somewhere along the way I was exposed to this, and thus, like it says in Ecclesiastes, I can look up and realize that there is nothing new under the sun. It's all been done before. There's nothing new in it. And the terrifying thing is that, okay, great, I know some ancient history. Joe Vecchio knows a boatload of ancient history. He and I could probably fill up an hour and a half, the next 2 hours of this program just on this topic. But it doesn't matter that we know it. It's who doesn't know it. The geniuses that don't know it. You know, it used to be that in the military academies of the United States, and heaven knows those of the British Empire, Sandhurst and whatnot, that this stuff was required knowledge. I don't know if it's apocryphal or not, but apparently everywhere that George S. Patton fought, he had historical perspective on and half the time believed he was reincarnated from somebody on the battlefield. And it matters. Ask yourself right now. Reckon George Bush has ever heard the name Thermopylae? Does he know what's inscribed on the stone there? Go tell the Spartans, stranger passing by, that here, obedient to their laws, we lie. When 300 people held off a quarter of a million? Does George Bush know that? Does he know about the Battle of Marathon? Does he know about the Battle of Salamis? Does he know about the struggle to retain the republic in the face of rising imperial desires on the parts of the leadership of Rome in the first century BCE? Do you honestly believe he does? Do you think that this kind of thing matters to anyone in the halls of government? You know what? What Tom Holland says is true, because it had better, by God, matter to people in the halls of government, because it matters to the people that they are opposed to. Everybody wants to stop with the rise of Islam and say that, oh, well, you know, that's the source of all our bug spray. This is a dynamic that's been at work for... When was the Trojan War? 1200 BCE? And it's happened over and over and over and over and over and over again, and nobody seems to learn from it. Our good friend Eugene Finnerman over at FinnermanWorks.com and his RDA, Your RDA of Irony, commemorated the anniversary of Gallipoli the other day in one of his postings. And Gallipoli was nothing but another reenactment of the bloodshed that has visited that area for over 2.5 millennia. And yet these goons in the Bush administration are trying to convince us that they're trying to do something new. All those people who like to wave their flags and holler about United States is the best nation on earth. Never been a country like us. Gonna last forever. All of those people, I wish to God they knew they knew this history, because if they really do love their country like they say they do, they would stop. They would stop this rush to war in Iran, and they would be in the streets trying to stop the destruction of the United States that's taking place every day in Iraq as our blood and treasure gets lost in the swirls of the stinking sand between the rivers. I'm lecturing, I'm sorry. But if you are inclined to flesh out some of this, go and read Tom Holland's Persian Fire. It's fairly new out. It's still only in hardback. You will be ever so glad that you did, and you will come away scratching your head and wondering, as I do, how can anybody possibly think that that this is something sharp or new or genius or freighted with any kind of honor or dignity. It is not. What we are doing in the Middle East is the same sleazy business that the king of Persia did nearly 2.5 millennia ago. It's the same damned thing. And it's the same thing that happened when a gang of the Athenians decided to invade Syracuse and got their asses handed to them. When at first they thought, "Wow, this is going to be easy. We're big, they're little, we're strong, they're weak. We'll run right over." No, it didn't happen that way. You know, and maybe. I don't know. Do you think since a lot of congressmen probably don't know this sort of thing, they know how to shake down donors for money. Do you think if you write your congressman demanding that we not go to war in Iran and you cite some of this, do you think it might have any impact on them, that you can back your words up with proof of how this kind of evil always ends? I don't know. Maybe it's worth a try. Kind of like to hope so. Tell you what, we're going to take a break. When we come back, your phone calls, 877-443-2366, 877-4. Head On. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid. I wish I had a good stiff drink. I'm trying to be less polite. I want to call a spade. I want to stop the war because I know the war will send too many children to an early grave.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got
to
go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Do you believe the environment is issue number one? Does the idea of genetically modified food cause you to lose your appetite? Do you prefer green over greed? Do rising sea levels and vanishing polar ice cause you concern about our planet and what we are doing to it? Would you like news with attitude on the environment, organics, renewable sources of energy? Well then join me, John Fox, for Foxed Up. Weekdays 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. in the UK, and 9 a.m. here in Sydney, where conversation radio becomes conservation radio, and we turn it straight up to 11, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
Did you receive an email from the IRS saying you're due a tax refund? If so, don't open it. The IRS does not request personal information by email. Hello, I'm Russell George, Treasury Inspector General for Tax Administration. The IRS and I want to warn you about bogus IRS emails and websites that look real but are not. These emails are schemes played by crooks who are out to steal your money and identity. Fall victim to it, and you can spend months, even years, cleaning up the mess they've made of your good name and credit record. Help stop these crooks from ripping people off. If you get a suspicious email, go to IRS.gov and search for identity theft to find out what to do. That's IRS.gov. Or call us at 1-800-366-4484. Again, that's 1-800-366-4484.
Welcome back. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Head On. And we will go immediately to the phones. Our good friend Sarge from Southern Mississippi has been holding. Hey, Sarge, welcome to the program. Okay. Do we have Sarge, Agnes? Okay. Well, all right, I understand that. Although the silence is a little bit daunting. Okay, Bob in North Dakota. Hey, Bob, welcome to the show.
Darn, I thought I could follow Sarge.
You got a lead this time, Bob.
I know, but hey, you know, everything you've been talking about tonight, I mean, it's just history, right? One thing about these Republicans, these conservatives, they don't follow history, Bob. They don't read it. They don't understand it. They don't think about it. They don't even think about the history of the United States. They do not think. They're incapable of, what would you call it, cognitive thought?
Well, I'm not so sure of that, Bob, because I think they know it. I think they've learned it. I think they're counting on us not to know it. There has been a deliberate dumbing down of the public education system in this country, Bob, over the course of about the last 30 to 40 years, and now we are seeing it bear fruit.
That's true. That is true. But whose fault is that? Can you blame the conservatives, or can you blame the parents And everyone that has a child in this nation, everyone that has a child in this nation, I mean...
Dig it, Bob. You want to know who to blame?
Yourself.
I'd like to blame every so-called Reagan Democrat in the United States living and dead.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
I will blame every so-called Reagan Republican in the United States living and dead.
You hit the nail on the head. I cannot come up with a name for them because, you know, I've met them. I've met them in the market. I've met them, and they are cowards, Bob. They are cowards. They're afraid of their own shadow. They're afraid to really stand up and be counted as a human being. I met a man today. Didn't meet him. He's kind of like a fixture at one of my favorite hardware stores. And the guy, he says, I'm a conservative. I'll die a conservative, but I'm more far right than these guys are. You know, I'm going, what are you talking about? You know, I'm way right of all these, you know, and they're not even conservatives. And he was talking about Goldwater and what a great statesman Goldwater was. But remember Goldwater? You know, he was talking about nuking people too. You know, he had this grand plan too, didn't he? And the American people threw him out. They said, no, we don't want him. But then we ended up with Nixon? You know?
Yeah, Nixon, who suddenly has been, as in my conversation with Sam Simpson, Nixon, who has been rehabilitated by George W. Bush. Unintentionally, I think.
You couldn't... Hey, that man, that Nixon that I guarded, I guarded him. I actually, guarded him on weekends, you know, out at his Western Ranch out there in San Clemente, California. I was locked down with a battalion of Marines to protect him from the American people. For God's sakes, you know, that's insane that you lock down, you know, a battalion of Marines every weekend Alexander the Great or whatever, you know, some person that thinks themselves a deity wants to control everyone.
I'm going to betray a little bit of my military ignorance, Bob. How many in a battalion?
About 2,500. 2,500.
Huh?
2,500 Marines.
Were 2,500 Marines dedicated to guarding Nixon's hide?
That's correct. And not counting the Secret Service, the FBI, and all the others that crawled all over San Clemente every weekend that he was there. There were 2,500 Marines locked and loaded, ready to take on the American people if they were to stand against a tyrant. You know? That was the way it was back there in 1970 and 71 and 72. You know?
Yeah.
That's the way it was. But, good God, 72 is when Nixon became... whatever he was, 75. We were rid of him. We were out of Vietnam, and we had Ford saying that Nixon was pardoned, but that we couldn't refight a war, you know, that we had already fought. Okay, and
right.
You know, but you stop for a moment. We lost Vietnam because we started Vietnam. We lost it because we started it. We started it, they didn't. See, and you can never win a war you start, because the people of that nation and the people of Iraq and the people of Iran. If you start a war with Iran, it's going to tear up this nation like no other war that we have ever been in. Remember what the Japanese did when they started World War II, and the Germans with their Nazi Adolf Hitler declaring war on the United States. The people of the United States rose up in their righteous to stand against tyranny, and it's time, Bob. It is so very much time that the American people, not these Republicans we keep talking about, but the American people, people of real courage and real strength, stand up against this. I don't know what you want to call it. It's just, but like those 300 Spartans, okay, they stood at Thermopylae. They stood and they served and they died for what? What did they die for? Just to be a cork in the bottle to slow down the Persians, to stop them for a moment. And the Persians were afraid. They were afraid to advance.
They held them up for 6 days, Bob, and that's all it took.
Well, what was it at Alamo? They said, hey, 13 days of glory at the Battle of Alamo? No, it was 90 minutes. It took the Mexican army 90 minutes to take down the Alamo once they started the assault. But see, the American people had been taught that it was 13 days of glory by John Wayne.
Yeah,
13 days of glory. No, it wasn't 13 days of glory. They waited for the army to get there. It took 90 minutes to take down the Alamo. So, you know, if you want to talk about wars in the past and wars that have been fought by warriors, and friends of mine died in one of those ugly, ugly things. Many friends of mine. And after a while, I didn't have any friends. But you know what, Bob? I got you.
Yeah.
And you are.
And you've got an entire community of people online, all over this country, all over this globe, and that's what's important. That's why, you know, that's why Sam called in, because we are the people who have the energies. We are the people who have the passion, the dedication to stand up and demand that these things end and that they not begin, to demand that America fulfill its promises, Bob.
You know what? I was just telling our dear Agnes that, you know, I had a little bump up with a conservative today. He said, I'm more far right than any of these others. I'm so far right that I'm way past anything.
Well, you know, but again, it's a fair question to ask these conservatives that purport how much they love this nation, if they love this nation enough to try to make sure that it makes it through another 100 years.
I asked him one question, Bob. What branch of service did you serve in? What part of the military did you serve in to protect this country? At any time in your past, can you tell me of one day of military service that you rendered to this nation? And he could not, because he did not, and he is not he's just one of those Republicans, Bob. You know, they talk about...
Yeah, more than happy for somebody else to go and fight and go and die as long as they get to holler and take joy in it.
Absolutely. And that's the thing. We've got to just, hey, Bob, I'm not afraid to die. What the problem is, it's getting damn hard to live, you know? So, hey,
I don't think truer words have been spoken, Bob.
Dying ain't a problem. living's getting tough. And people, if you don't get off your duffs and start fighting, you ain't going to have nothing left except to die, and dying's easy. Dying is so easy.
And the thing is, Bob, at the rate we're going, we're not. It's, you remember that old line about it's, I would rather, what is it? I'd rather die on my feet than live on my knees. You remember
damn
that?
Right, Bob. You damn
well,
right,
we're
Bob.
We're coming to a point in this country, and I've got the news story in front of me, where the dying we're going to do is going to be on our knees. Okay, the last of our freedoms are on the way out the door. If we don't get business, it's done.
Not
if we don't get busy
old Marine, not this old jarhead, not this old gyrene. I will never die on my knees. I'll die on my feet, and I'll take a few of them with me when I go. I swear that to whatever you hold dear and sacred. I swear to God, Bob. I swear to whatever.
We'd rather have you alive and fighting, Bob. And that's why Phil and that's why Sam are talking about. You know, tell these people now that it is not acceptable.
Do it every day. Do it in the market. Do it in your church. Do it in your schools. Do it everywhere. Stand and say enough, enough already. It's time that we take our country back, Bob. Like old Sarge down here in Mississippi. He's doing it, you know, by all of his decency and all of the wonderful things that he works so hard and he fights so well. And I would stand back to back with that man anywhere, any day, anyhow, because he has courage, more courage than has been shown by any congressman, any senator, or any one of these these ne'er-do-well, living off the tit of the public, government servants, and they do not serve those that are the government. We, the people, Bob, we are the government. The people of the United States are the government, and it's time that we reclaim. We take back what George Washington and the boys gave us in 1776. It's time for us, the people of the United States, U.S., us, to take back what is rightfully ours, and that is our God-given rights and our constitutionally guaranteed rights, the right to freedom of speech, the right to freedom of assembly, the right to worship whatever we believe, and the right to speak truth to power, Bob, and that's what you do, and I love you for it. You speak truth to power, and just keep speaking at them, and just stand up and spit them in the eye, and, you know, like old, what was that, that Hank Williams Jr. said? Like to meet that boy. Spit some Beetaloos or beech nut juice in his eye and shoot him down by 45. Well, there are times when we got to do exactly that. You know? Anyway.
Well, standing up is the, it may sound a little crazy or a little anomalous, but standing up is the first step.
Yes.
And I don't know how many of our so-called elected representatives have figured that out yet. But it's got to happen, Bob.
It will.
It's got to happen for the sake of the Republic. It's got to happen for the sake of the Constitution.
It will. But, hey, I better let you, run off and fight the good fight and talk your talk and walk your walk, because I know you actually walk the walk, and that makes me proud to call you friend. Because I do every day. I just walk the walk, and I don't back down, and I will not. And I will not be afraid. I will not fear. I have no time to be afraid, Bob. And we don't. America doesn't have time to be afraid. We have time. The only thing we have time to do is action. Time to get to work, people. It's time to go out in the streets. Stand up against these people. and bang those pots and pans together and say, no more. Let the gals hit the streets and tell the guys, until you stop this war, no more sex. No more.
Ah, the Lysistrata. We're doing the ancient history. Yeah, absolutely.
Just
absolutely.
Bang those pots together and say, you ain't getting none until you come home, son. You know?
Yep. All right, Bob. Thanks a lot. Sarge is going to be on the way after the break.
Well, I'd like to hear him. I love the man, and tell him Gunny salutes him. I salute him.
He's hearing it now, Bob. You have a great evening, and give our best to Glenda, please.
Oh, yes. I was going to turn it over to Agnes and let them two hands, kind of swap.
Yeah, but she's producing a radio show. Bob, we got to get out of here.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Take it easy. Bye now.
Okay. Bye-bye.
All right, we'll come back with your phone calls, including Sarge, on the way, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, Head On. This is the Head On Radio Network. This is The Horn, America's liberal voice. I'm Bob Kincaid.
The United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competency and training. UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business anytime and every time. It's their job to provide manpower. They build partnerships based on respect and trust. They provide skilled, responsible millwrights and carpenters to meet the challenge of any project because they believe and what they're doing and are so very committed to getting each and every job done right. They include a clause in your contract that eliminates work slowdown and jurisdictional disputes because they believe that, as professionals, they can discuss and solve any problem while keeping your project on target on time. We'd like to take this opportunity to thank the men and women of the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights for building the American dream and saving the American dream. Thank you.
Obviously need to address the issue of the Saddam Hussein execution. Have seen the video that was taken on a cell phone, or have read about the circumstances surrounding the execution. It's pretty evident that the absolutely worst thing that could have happened with the carrying out of the sentence after the long trial of Saddam Hussein happened. And if we had sat down and made a list and said, all right, here's a list of six or seven different things that could happen, what would be the very, very worst thing that could happen, not only for us, for the United States, but for the world and for the Iraqis themselves? And it seems to me that if not first, then definitely second would have been what indeed did happen.
The Dr. Bill O'Brien Show, Tuesday to Thursday, noon to 2 Eastern, here on the Head On Radio Network.
Here's a test for you. Listen and identify the following water-saving devices in your home. Ready? That's the sound of water-saving device number 54, your toothbrush. Turning the water off while you brush your teeth saves more than 1,000 gallons a year. Next, that's your clock. Water-saving device number 23. Use it to reduce your shower by 5 minutes and save nearly 9,000 gallons a year. Try this one. Right. It's water-saving device number 83, your washing machine. Washing full loads of laundry or dishes can save thousands of gallons of water each year. Last clue. That's you, logging on to wateruseitwisely.com, a fun website filled with hundreds of water-saving tips from your local water utility and the Metropolitan Washington Council of Governments. There are a number of ways to save water, and they all start with you. Water. Use it wisely.
Don't worry,
All right, about 7 minutes before the hour, I'm Bob Kincaid. You're listening to the Head On Radio Network, America's liberal voice. And we go to the phones. Our good friend Sarge checks in from southern Mississippi. Hey, Sarge, welcome to the program.
Hey, I can hear you a little better tonight.
Hey, I'm glad.
It still hurts like hell, but hey, it's as I people around here used to say when they'd hurt themselves doing something they enjoy doing and love doing, they'd say, yeah, but it's a good hurt. So, yeah, it's a good hurt, Bob. Gani, thank you, pal. You are a trooper, man. You keep it up, pal. Now that I've said that, let me tell you what I really call for. As you know, I wanted to mention Judy, and we still have that drive going on to help this lady. Go to unreportednews.net, read the story on her. I don't want to spend time on talking about that right now. What I do want to talk about is I talked to Leonard Clark before I called you, and that's why I'm
right out in Arizona.
And Leonard, of course, has a recall petition going on John McCain. They were talking about it on the Peter B. Collins show, and he was going to try and call you, but he didn't know if he'd make it, so he asked me to call, and he's going to try and call you tomorrow and give you a report.
That'd be great. I enjoyed my conversation with Leonard, and I hope I'd love to hear from him again.
Well, he's planning on calling you, and I'm calling instead tonight, so you just have to put up with the leftovers, and tomorrow you'll have the first crew in here.
No sweat, Sarge.
But anyway, Leonard is also helping me with a project I have here in Mississippi called, and I'm not sure which way I want to go on this. I want to either have a recall on Haley Barbour, or at least want to have some kind of redress of grievances on Haley Barbour, making him explain some of these videos that we took while we were on the Mississippi coast last weekend.
Well, do you have referendum and recall in Mississippi, Sarge?
There is a recall. I don't know how it works. I haven't looked into it yet. I did check, and there is such a thing. I don't know when it was last used. I don't know how to proceed with it, but I've got some people working with me that's going to help me. There's a guy in Jackson, Mississippi that's going to look into it with me as well. And I think we're going to actually create some headaches for Mr. Barbour.
Well, it certainly would be politically embarrassing for him. And, anytime you can embarrass Haley Barbour, that's fine by me.
Well, when I let it be known in the article, and you can read about it at Jeff Barrius's Truth to Power Hour website, but he published what I wrote. And one thing I make sure that everybody understands, Barbour cannot touch these videos. He can't do a damn thing about them because they're all over the United States. There are copies being sent all over. Dennis Kucinich is getting a copy. Greg Palast is getting a copy. Head On Radio is getting a copy. Unreported News will have it posted. And, it's just going to be all over the country. So we're getting these videos out all over the United States and to anybody that we can get them into the hands of. But when you see this stuff, and it's like Sean Ryan said, he looked at the videos after he got back, and he was on the air that evening on the Malloy show, and he said, I was there. I took those videos, and I saw all of this, and he said, the videos just really tamed down what we really saw. And so when everybody sees these videos, I want you to maybe triple the effect of it, and maybe you'll have just a vague idea of what these people are living through. It's horrible, and yet this rat is running around the country, rat being Haley Barbour, that saying everything is going good, that the casino's open. Well, hey, I hadn't met a person yet that lived in a friggin' casino.
Nope. I know. I can imagine there are probably a few people that have no place to live because of the casinos, but that's a different story.
That's right. And that's what I'm begging everybody, please please go in there and help us get Judy this house and get her into a safe, secure spot, because these people want to kill people like Judy. She's had threats on her life. She's had her tire slashed. She's had her ID stolen. She's every conceivable thing that can happen to this poor woman is happening. She's got black mold in her house, and they will not in her trailer, FEMA trailer, and they refuse to even acknowledge that it's there. They say it's because her dog is peeing in the corner. Well, it's not true. It's not true. Jim Yancey and I looked at it. We found the leak. Sean Ryan looked at it. He filmed the leak. So FEMA can kiss my butt, because I'm going to tell you right now, that woman has a black mold problem. It's horrible. I was in there less than a minute, and I had to walk out because I was overwhelmed by the smell of the mold. Sean Ryan, sure, within a minute, he had to walk out because he, too, was being overwhelmed with the mold. And this is one of the more gentle areas that people are suffering in. So, you know, please, I help us with this. Please, we got to get this woman in a safe place. If she dies, Bob, if anything happens to this woman, you can just automatically say there's going to be 100 people die because of it. That's how much this woman means to this area. So please, everybody, go to our site and donate, because we've got to do something. And we're going to recall this crappy guy named Barber. But we need your help. We need the support. And we got to support Head On. We've got to support NoBN. We've got to get the truth out there, folks.
Because if we don't, no one else will, Sarge.
That's right. I'm going to let you go, Bob. Thanks for giving me the time. And
No problem at all. Glad your ear's doing better. I was worried about that.
I had to be so abbreviated. But, you know, this is another example of your government supporting the troops. Are these rats supporting the troops? Remember, I was a troop, and this is ear damage is due to my military service. And believe it or not, they actually will not won't even declare it as a service connected illness, even though it is well documented in my medical records.
Jesus, Sarge, thank you.
Thank you. Bye bye.
Have a good night. Bye now. And we will take our top of the hour break. Of course, the big breaking news. George Bush's pet poodle, Tony Blair, seems to be off the leash. Maybe we'll talk about that in the next hour. This is the Head On Radio Network. The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
This is the Quality News Network. A key provision in President Bush's anti-terror law was upheld by the U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit Court today. The court ruled 2-1 that civilian courts no longer have the authority to consider whether the military is illegally holding foreigners. British troops will begin withdrawing from Iraq, according to a report from the BBC. The broadcast company says Britain's Prime Minister will make an announcement Wednesday revealing a timetable for withdrawing hundreds of troops over the next few weeks. Tony Blair said that by the end of the year, 3,000 out of 7,000 will leave Iraq. Today, Iran said that it would shut down its uranium enrichment program if everyone else does, including the U.S. Iran has until tomorrow to abandon its nuclear fuel program or face additional economic sanctions. Vice President Dick Cheney is in Japan drumming up support for President Bush's security surge in Iraq. Diplomats will also discuss six-party talks designed to encourage North Korea to demand to abandon its nuclear weaponry program. In and around Baghdad today, car bombs have killed at least 18 people, wounded another 123. Many Iraqis were sickened when a tanker filled with chlorine gas was booby-trapped to explode right outside of a restaurant. In addition, 20 bodies bearing evidence of torture were found scattered throughout Baghdad neighborhoods. More Taliban violence in Afghanistan. A suicide bomber dressed as a doctor blew himself up at a hospital today. Six NATO soldiers were wounded. Gun battles between Yemeni forces and Shia rebels have killed more than 100 people in the past 5 days. Most of the dead are Yemeni soldiers. Government sources say Libya and Iran are supplying the rebels with arms. In Mozambique, rescue workers are warning of a major disaster in the making, where more than 120,000 people have fled their homes following severe flooding in the Zambezi Valley. In Kosovo, clashes continue. Following the UN's recommendation, Kosovo be given limited independence from Serbia. In Washington, the Lewis Scooter Libby perjury trial is in the last stages. Defense and prosecuting attorneys gave their closing arguments today. And also in Washington, retired Vice Admiral Mike McConnell is to be sworn in as Chief of U.S. Intelligence. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Science and business are up next.
Here's good news about your money. Monterey County Bank has won the Bauer Financial 5-Star Superior Rating for financial strength and stability, making it one of the safest banks in Monterey County for your money. It's nice to know your money is in a safe place, but there are even more reasons to bank with Monterey County Bank. They now have 4 convenient locations in Carmel, Monterey, Carmel Valley, and Pacific Grove. And Monterey County Bank is the oldest locally owned bank, now celebrating its 30th anniversary serving you. Here's another important point. Local businesses have come to trust and rely on Monterey County Bank's position as the county's number one SBA small business lender. Safety, convenience, and local people you can trust. That's Monterey County Bank. Stop in at one of our 4 branches and find out why you can bank on us. Monterey County Bank, SBA preferred lender and equal housing lender, member FDIC.
Britain's Museum of Natural History is being sued to stop it from conducting tests on ancient remains discovered on the island of Tasmania. Aborigines from the island say the prescribed experiments amount to desecration of their ancestors. The American Heart Association is warning nearly all American women that they are at risk of a heart attack or stroke. The group urges women to be more aggressive fighting heart disease and reminds them to ask their doctors about the benefits of taking low-dosage aspirin every day. Volvo is acquiring Japanese truck maker Nissan Diesel. The deal is valued at $1 billion. Vulcan Materials is set to acquire Florida Rock for $4.6 billion in cash and stocks. Boards of directors from both companies have said yes to the purchase. Walmart is on a rampage. They're teaming up with the Indian phone company Bharti Enterprises to open shops and supermarkets throughout India. Walmart also announced plans today to open 9 new stores over the next 2 years throughout the U.S. in urban areas with high unemployment. 2 will be in California, 1 in Richmond, 1 in Sanger. Another great day on Wall Street today. The NASDAQ was up 17 and closed at 25.13. S&P 500 was up 4, closing at 14.59. Oil closed down $1.32, closing at $58.07 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. More at QualityNewsNetwork.com.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Yes, we are. Right back and right back at it. I noticed, and I'm not telling on anybody or anything. That's not my aim. Let me run through with you real quick the full horn schedule of programming and how it all works out. Okay? Because I noticed that the time was wrong in the Dr. Bill promo. And that's because we've shaken up the schedule a little bit. On Mondays and Fridays, from 3 to 5 p.m., that's Dr. Bill O'Brien, the all times are Eastern. Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays, that's, of course, our very own beloved Guy James, 3 to 5 p.m. Eastern. The day begins with Joe Vecchio and the Cup of Joe radio program at 10 a.m. Eastern, followed at 11 a.m. Eastern by Jeff Allen Wolf, Wolf on the Air, and that runs till 2 p.m. Eastern. Our very own Mark Levine, who not so much... He doesn't so much attack a problem as voice a crushing brief against it. He's on from 2 to 3 p.m. Monday through Friday. John Fox at 5 p.m. Eastern Time till 6, Monday through Friday. And, of course, little old me, 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern, Monday through Friday. So just especially for new listeners, just to clear things up and not have them be
quite so confusing, because we're thrilled to death with all the new listeners that we're getting via the fine folks at iTunes listing America's Liberal Voice and making that available to folks around the world via iTunes. We'd love to hear from you, your thoughts, where you're listening, just to get an idea of the kind of global reach that we're getting here. You can always drop me a line at bob@headonradio.com. I'd really, really love to hear from you. All right, and we go back to the phones now. Our good friend David calling in from Maine. David, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Bob. You know, CNN has the new bulletin that Brittany went back to rehab.
Yeah, I know. Doggone it. And you know what? You know what's worse? She checked into rehab last week, David. How bad off are you when you check into Eric Clapton's rehab?
If I was CNN, this is going to segue into what I was talking about last night, because again, nobody's talking about it, and it's blowing my mind. You're watching it every Sunday or Monday, whatever it is. It's on every Sunday, Monday. Keith Olbermann. Nobody brought it to Keith Olbermann's desk. Well, I haven't seen Countdown Olbermann, but I haven't seen any clips of it on the web, so I assume it's not out there. Have you seen it on Olbermann? Well,
I don't think so.
Okay, this to me, people, is like the progressives and the left, Michael Moore. There are so many things to discredit from this guy, because like I said, in case you missed yesterday, I was talking about the producer and creator of the Fox TV show 24, and he has an article in the New Yorker. It's three pages. And they just let this guy talk and talk and talk about his family life and his political views. And the thing that's alarming to me is basically they say 24 is like an auxiliary wing to the White House. Now, if that doesn't concern you, then you're not paying attention.
Yeah, we knew they co-opted Fox News Channel. I mean, anybody
right.
with a half a brain can turn it on and see that. But it's the fact that they have managed to co-opt an entertainment channel and entertainment programming that becomes so disturbing.
Here's some.
Because that's more subtle, and in many ways, I agree with you, David, more effective than just beating somebody over the head with propaganda. This is subtle. I mean, there are progressives and liberals out there that just love 24 and would not be away from the TV when that comes on, and that is disturbing to me.
That's right, and that's why I'm saying, like, Keith Olbermann or Jack Cafferty, somebody, they should talk about Rob Sernow. Now, probably it's not been brought to their news desk, and maybe they need a highlight pen to somebody to say, okay, you know what? This wasn't talked about. Rob Sernow, right now, what he said. And to me, for example, here he goes into his family life. He says his parents were FDR Democrats, so obviously he was a rebel. He wanted to be a rebel, obviously. He hated who he was. That's what I'm looking at right now. It was just assumed, especially in the Jewish community, to which his family belonged. But when you grow up, you start to challenge your parents' assumptions. Am I Jewish? Am I a Democrat? Many of his peers at the University of California, Berkeley, where he attended college, were liberals or radicals. They were all socialists and Marxists, but living off their family money. Let's stop that for a minute. How the hell do you know somebody's living off their... all of them were living off their family's money? You know, that's such a stupid generalization. And it occurs to me that nobody ever stops to think. It's like bobbleheads on TV. It's like bobbleheads in interaction of radio and everything. You should stop people and say, how do you know how everyone is... how do you know these giant, broad generalizations you're making? Where do you get your facts from? That's what we need to be like, people.
Yeah, well, and of course, that's the kind... I mean, that is such an old canard about the left that...
I know.
That you can only have views that... suggest that ordinary working people are as important as the folks in the boardroom if you're some sort of a lefty, and if you are some sort of a lefty, that means you are de facto rich. You're right, Dave. That just drives me batty.
Because I
haven't met any of these limousine liberals.
And notice, people, one thing people should pay attention to, because the art of framing is such a cunning thing. If you notice, hippies are no longer in the equation. I mean, they're on the T-shirts and the bumper sticker, but they're saying socialist and Marxist. What does that tell you? It tells you they're going exactly for those kind of target. They want to pinpoint you to the socialist or the Marxist or the radical.
Right, because commie, calling somebody a commie still works.
Right.
For some crowds. I mean, more than I would like to admit exist in this United States. Oh, he must be some sort of a communist. And I don't know why it works, but it does. It still works with people. I was checking CNN during the top of the hour news.
Right.
They were doing a story on Obama in Hollywood, and you know what the banner they had running underneath was, David? Obama, out in the open. What?
As if he's been
some sort of threat to America that's operating undercover. This is not journalism. This is pure and simple jingoism. It's the kind of stuff you would expect of a tin pot dictatorship. But then again, if you remember the report that was out there from a couple of months back, what are we on the list of free speech in the world today?
Right.
75th? Well, there's why. Obama, out in the open.
You know, and the thing about it is the reason why I bring it up is because, like, for example, then he says, after he says the family money, he says, it seemed to me there was some obvious hypocrisy here. It was absurd. You know what? That's so stupid to begin with, because it's a contradiction just being a friggin' American. You're going to have hypocrisies and contradictions and paradoxes and whatever, things that are going to confuse you. And to just box someone in, I mean, how is it that you can box someone in who is a socialist or Marxist, but immediately when someone boxes you in, you see it as an attack? I mean, and these are the things that are not brought up in the media. They're not brought up to Ann Coulter. Nobody brings it up. And they just sit there like bobbleheads. I mean, even, you know what, I like Bill Maher's show, Real Time. I saw the opening show this week.
Yeah.
And I thought
he
had a good segment with Edwards. And I thought he had good talk. But, you know, I don't know, maybe somewhere in my mind I was hoping that he would comment on something that Rob Cernow, like a writer, assistant, somebody brought him this paper, New York article in New Yorker, because it's on every week. And they didn't talk about it. And it was like, you know, with the monologue time you have, you could talk about an important issue. That's the thing that really gets me about some of these political shows, is that the time that's spent on some of these shows, it's just ridiculous, the usage of time.
Well, of course, it's a double-edged sword. If you come out after 24, you know the first place that the media is going to take you?
Yeah.
I mean, if you're Bill Maher, or God knows if you're a politician, and you come out against 24... the first place you're going to be taken is you are going to be tarred and feathered and basically compared to none other than Dan Quayle when he launched his attack on Murphy Brown.
I agree with you, and you know, the comments in here is like, here's a comment where he makes like kind of like a Jewish dig at himself, and it's so absurd. There's so much stuff to attack here. He says for 4 years he divorced his wife in 85, a medical student who was Jewish and with whom he has two daughters. 4 years later he remarried. His wife, who used to work in film development, is Catholic. They have three daughters whom they sent to Catholic schools.
David, you know, I mean, that just makes my skin crawl.
What's the
religious affiliation got to do with anything? He divorced his first wife. He married his second wife. They had kids. Blah blah blah.
Well, this is why. I mean, this is why he likes to bring his girls to the set and rushes home for his wife's pork chop dinners. So obviously, this is Psych 101, Bob. He's eating pork chops, and you know, he says I got to know who I was and who I wasn't. He said I wasn't the perfect Jewish kid who was married with a Jewish family. Instead, he said I decided I like Catholics. They're so grounded. I sort of reoriented myself. If anyone...
Was this thing scripted by Mel Gibson?
No, this is...
No, but I mean...
Yeah,
I know, but this sounds like something straight out of Mel Gibson's weird little camp.
Can you imagine if John Kerry or a producer for, like, I don't know, Frontline, or better yet, on ABC, maybe Dan Rather said stuff like this? AIPAC would be having him for lunch.
Well, and not only that, but consider for a minute, if you will, do you remember the foo-frah, the Tempest in a Teapot that launched last week over, and the week before, over John Edwards bloggers?
Yeah.
Okay, that was William Donahue, who is president of the Catholic League. And, you know, it's basically a front group for just utter, absolute, unmitigated, disgusting bigotry. He came out and said, well, you know, John Edwards is clearly anti-Catholic. If the shoe had been on the other foot and he'd said, well, you know, I left Catholicism and I became Jewish because Jewish people are so grounded. William, there is an industry, if you will, out there that is ready to come screaming to the forefront to scream bias.
You know,
the right wing complains about political correctness, but they're the ones who practice it most often.
You know, that's interesting you bring up Donahue, because I think you know what I'm going to mention on this. They dropped the ball on one of the comments he made recently about anal sex or something.
Yeah.
It was just a silly comment. I don't know. You'd have to look up Crooks and Liars exactly what the quote was. But, I mean, it was right there. I mean, it was right there, and it's like, oh, I'm not touching it. Nobody's touching it. He says it. But if it was pertaining to Catholics and they said anal sex, you would hear that. You would have that in rotation for like 2 or 3 hours a day on these media shows. I think what's really telling in this article is Brian Grazer's comments, where he says he's a devoted family man Sternow says Grazer is a devoted family man and a really close friend. But when Grazer first met Sternow, he recalled, I nearly walked out. He was really glib and insulting. I was shocked. He's a tough guy. He's a meat-eating alpha male. He's a monster. He observed, and this comment's really revealing, maybe Jack Bauer has some parts of him. Well, of course, Grazer, he's the creator. It's his way to live out the fantasy of it.
Yeah, it's got his fingerprints all over it. It's his child. It's his thing. He invented it. Of course. Sure.
But then he goes, I mean, this takes the cake. During 3 decades as a journeyman screenwriter, Sternow grew increasingly conservative. He hated welfare, which he saw as government handouts. Liberal courts also angered him. He loved Ronald Reagan's strength. That is so friggin' corny. And disdained Jimmy Carter's belief that people would be nice to us just because we were humane. That never works. He said of Reagan, I can hardly think of him without breaking into tears. I just felt Ronald Reagan was the father that this country needed.
I can hardly think of Reagan without breaking into tears either, but for vastly different reasons.
He made me feel good that I was in his family. Sir, what family is that? Rich and white? I mean, come on! Come on, they're just
ignorant and senile? I mean, you know, there's several possibilities there, Dave.
With Alzheimer's? I mean, in making bad movies in film? I guess, I can see the relationship there.
Oh, God. Well, there's this thing that I mentioned a few minutes ago that I saw on CNN during the break. It was a whole package on how Barack Obama is directly challenging Hillary for Hollywood's liberal money. And so it was that same damn thing all over. You know, you mentioned Marxists, leftists, communists,
right,
socialists. None of it's gone away, David. It's all here. You know, I wasn't even around for the McCarthy witch hunts. I hadn't been born yet, but it had not gone away. You know, I grew up here in Alabama, and George Wallace was hot. You know, they're going to stop the communists. It was communist, 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 and of course that's what you get out of it. That's what you get out of it. They're still playing it because the Hollywood liberal is code for fifth columnist. It's code for communist. It's code for, you know, somebody who wants to take away our property rights. It's straight out of the John Birch Society, for the love of God. And all this time, while Fox and CNN are sitting there blathering, blithering idiots on about Hollywood liberals, meanwhile, what you're talking about?
But remember,
things like 24.
But remember, Bob, it's all about projection. So if they say we're communists, that means to me that they're a hybrid. They're capitalist communists.
Well,
and they don't
want
to be discovered.
Sure, they're crypto commies. Ooh,
crypto,
there's a good
commies.
One. There's a blast.
There
there's
go.
A blast
that,
from your
there's
path.
A framework. Send that to George Lykoff.
Yeah, and of course, you know, remember, oh, who's the Joyce Rogers Brown? She was one of the ones that the Democrats in the Senate got down on their knees and did for the Republicans what Monica did for Bill, to, you know, so that the filibuster wouldn't be taken away. That woman freely admits that she was a Maoist in college, and now she is some sort of, you know, and then she became an uber conservative.
You know, it's like when they have, whenever we have panels and discussions on things, and it's somehow shown on TV, that's a rarity. But when Politically Correct was on TV, I think you'll remember this, we all used to stay, I used to stay up and watch it, and sit through the commercials, and think how stupid it was that the credits would ending and they would still be talking, and it was like the worst tease imaginable. It's like, why are they only giving this a half hour? But anyways, because it was only 15 minutes really with all the damn commercials, but the thing that really got me was Marr, an intelligent satirist, an intelligent guy who had a lot going for him, he would put Ann Coulter on. I think you know where I'm going with this. He put Ann Coulter on, and she would talk. And she would talk, and be like, okay, she's funny, I get it. And it would be like you'd be ramping her up. But then when we get to the topic of Reagan and what he did for this country, you know what happened, Bob? People in the audience would applaud. People in that would applaud. They wouldn't question anything about Reagan. Oh, can't do that, can't do that. But when immediately Jimmy Carter, they would question things, and they would get the audience to like laugh or something about peanuts or something like that. But the thing that always struck me as funny is somebody should stop that show. If I had a time machine, I'd go back, and if I could be Bill Maher, like Quantum Leap, Sam Beckett, I would go into Bill Maher, and I would say, wait a minute, Ann, wait a minute. Specifically, tell me what Ronald Reagan has done for this country, for America.
Oh, he destroyed the Soviet Union, right?
Yeah.
Same crap. Yeah.
When they bring up Soviet Union, it was so obviously falling apart by that time. He didn't do anything.
It was predicted in a CIA paper as early as, I think, 1972. David, thanks so much. We've got to roll on. But, great food for thought. I do appreciate it.
All right, Bob. Later.
Take it easy. You know, the stuff, you know, David's a watcher of film and a looker at TV, and he's got a lot to offer, and it's worth thinking about. Yeah, Ronald Reagan, help me, Jesus. Let's keep it rolling along. New caller from Wisconsin, Mark.
Yes, Bob.
Thanks for calling. Great to hear from you. Pleased to make your acquaintance.
Yep, same here. I've been listening for a while and finally put together a couple pet peeves here I wanted to talk to you about.
All right.
One of them is a religious pet peeve. I went to a Christian church not long ago, and they had one of my favorite Bible verses. It was the subject of the sermon, and it was from Matthew, and it was the one about the separating the sheep from the goats at the final judgment. You probably remember that one.
Absolutely.
It's a situation where the sheep get to go to a good place because they took care of the poor, visited people in prison, so forth, and the goats didn't do that, so they have to go to a bad place. And this church, which is a fairly conservative church, generally talks about reading the Bible literally and taking it word for word. But I was amazed that when it came to this sermon, this pastor got up and said, "Well," and went through the scripture and then said, "Well, we really cannot take this section literally. This would mean that you can go to a good place based on good works, and of course that's not true. You can't get there by works; you have to get there by faith." And so I was just really—it was a pet peeve because here is one of my favorite verses. And a church that says you have to take things everything is inspired, there's no inaccuracies, that type of thing. And then when it comes to this verse, all of a sudden it's a parable and cannot be taken.
Yeah, it's not so inerrant anymore, is it?
That's right.
You know, there's a classic example of that, Mark, in Matthew, with the parable of the not even a parable, it's the story. It's the rich man who came to Jesus and said, "I'm following the law and I'm doing everything you said. What do I have to do to enter the kingdom of heaven?" I think is something. And Jesus says, "Look, sell everything you got and follow me, and give it to the poor." And then he goes on and he says, you know, look, it's going to be easier for a camel to pass through the eye of a needle than it is for a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven. And if you bring that up to one of these literalists, well, that's not what he meant. He wasn't really saying that. And having being a recovering Southern Baptist myself, I can remember specifically being told, well, he was talking, there's this gate in Old Jerusalem called the Eye of the Needle. That's what he was talking about. No, he was talking about the way that rich people pile up stuff and put more value on stuff than they do on people.
Yeah. All right, and I've suddenly, got another pet peeve.
All right, go with it.
All right. It's occasionally when I'm looking for some radio stations to listen to, I'll just scan the dial, and I'll hit upon one that says something like this. This radio station has this message. When you were younger, you had rock and roll that would keep you going and was part of your life. But now that you're older, you need to move on beyond that and have some education and some thinking parts to your life. And so this is a news radio. This is a talk radio news radio program that will help you do that. But they're all conservative talk show hosts, and they call it news radio. And
there's no news in it.
There's no news, and it's not a cross section at all. It's one conservative talk show host after another. At least there's a couple radio stations that I find that maybe throws a token liberal in there. But there's so many of them that just have they call themselves talk radio or news radio, and that's all they have. It's just one point of view, and it's a pet peeve.
Well, it should bother you. It should bother anybody who thinks in this country, Mark. Because if you take a minute and you look at it, you realize that this is a deliberate attempt to program not to program a radio station, but to program public opinion in the United States. It's why the horn is on the internet. There's no room for us in terrestrial radio, quite frankly.
Yep.
I learned that the hard way.
A couple of good things, and then I'll sign off here. And one of them is that I do listen to Alan Colmes, and even though he's on Fox Radio, and some people criticize him for doing that, I listen to his show, and he hangs in there. He gets a lot of people who disagree with him call in, and he doesn't back down, doesn't compromise. He basically states his position time after time, night after night. So I give a lot of credit to the guy.
Well, he does, and he's better about doing that on radio than he is on TV. He'll stand in there, but his job on TV, don't you think, Mark, is he's clearly counterpoint to Sean Hannity, and it's like, you know, watching it on TV, it's like professional wrestling. You know who's supposed to win.
Yeah.
So I do. Oh, I can't without a 1.75 liter jug of Pepto Bismol at my side.
Radio is good. One final thing, and I had an opportunity. I'm in the service industry, and not an industry at all that would be expected to be looking into this. But I got an invitation, and I went to Washington D.C. last week and visited a major labor union, and they were very accommodating to me. Had an excellent meeting, and it's possible at our little organization here, a service industry, and I don't want to tell which one because I want to be get my foot in the door there. But what an honor to visit their headquarters and the way they treated me. And I told them that it was a highlight of my career to go out and talk to them about the possibility of joining their union. So that's
that would be so exciting.
Yeah, it is. It's a real opportunity for me. I'm just excited about it.
Well, I hope it works out for you. Let us shoot me an email if you want to share any of the other details. I'll certainly keep it private, but anything we can do to help, we certainly will. Because our buddy Wayne said a couple of nights ago on the program, I think it was back last Friday night, he said all these people who complain, oh, we can't have socialized health care, blah blah blah, that's communism. If you if you allow people to join unions and have meaningful health care through their union organization, then the health care problem in America largely dries up and becomes very manageable. But these self-same people, these conservatives, can't have you join in a union. You know, they want their cake and they want to eat it too, and it's maddening.
And particularly when they have some of them do have very good pension plans.
Oh, absolutely.
And so that's another opportunity. But that's it, Bob. I'll sign off. It was nice to talk to you. I'll let somebody else step in.
Okay, good to talk to you too, Mark. I hope we'll hear from you again. Take care.
Very good.
Bye now. It is half past the hour, a little bit more so. We'll take our bottom of the hour break. We'll come back with more of your phone calls. If there's a bee under your bonnet, get it out of it. You know, those suckers sting. 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. This is America's liberal voice, the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob.
Tax on the clock and the TV is on. I'm always sleep with my guns when you're gone. There's a blade by the bed and a phone in my hand. A dog on the floor and some cash on the nightstand. When I'm all alone, the demon stops and I just can't say. What should I do? Just a little baby. What if the lights go out and maybe? And then the wind just starts to moan outside the door. And it follows me home now. Good night. Ooh, now all the sun.
There's one place on the web you can go that's so topical, you can apply it liberally. WD40.com. WDYAD40.com. Clyde, Wally, and Goofy are there. They're working hard every day to give you updates in the news, politics, and a great sense of humor. So stop on by and see the boys at WD40.com, a place where you can raise your voice and be heard. WD40.com, your one-stop shop for all things progressive.
The difference between what I do on my show and what all the right-wing types do on their shows is very simple. I'm not going to lie to you. That doesn't mean you're going to agree with me about everything or that you're going to like hearing everything I have to say, but I will guarantee you that when I say something on my show, I say it because I mean it and I believe it, and I'm not just saying it to get you riled up and to boost my ratings. No potty mouth, no trash talking, no BS, just the straight truth as I see it, because the lies may sound good for a while, but the truth is there forever. It's not always pleasant, it's not always nice, sometimes it's hard to see through all the crap, but it's there. And that's what you're going to get from me, and that's why you should listen to my show. The Cup of Joe Radio Show, Mondays and Fridays from noon to 2 Eastern Standard Time on the Head On Radio Network.
Native American culture has helped shape many things, from the structure of the U.S. government to the foods we eat at the dinner table. But where Indians lack presence are newsrooms. I'm Brian Bull of the Nez Perce Tribe of Idaho and a member of the Native American Journalists Association. Please go to NAJA.com and learn how you can join. We need people familiar with Native culture to tell our stories and set the record straight against stereotypes and misperceptions. NAJA, raising the next generation of storytellers.
Today, all Americans are feeling the pinch of high energy prices. And this winter, the cost of heating your home could account for nearly half of your energy bill. I'm Energy Secretary Sam Bodman, with steps you can take to save money and make your home more energy efficient. First, give your home furnace or heat pump a checkup to ensure it's running as efficiently as possible. Proper insulation in attic, ceilings, floors, crawl spaces, and exterior and basement walls can save 30% on your home energy bill. And insulate the heating ducts, even in unheated areas of your house. Finally, installing a programmable thermostat will ensure you don't pay for energy you aren't using. Program the thermostat down to 65 degrees for 8 hours a day to reduce your heating bill by up to 10%. You have the power to make a difference. You can reduce your home energy bills and help our nation reduce its energy use.
For more energy efficiency tips, please visit our website at www.doe.gov or call toll-free 1-877-337-3463. This powerful savings message is provided by the U.S. Department of Energy and the Alliance to Save Energy.
Gator. We're so glad you could join us at the Skate Center tonight. Everybody, backwards skate! Couple skate coming up. Okay, sorry. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is the Head On Radio Network, and back to the phones. Our good friend Susan joins us from Columbia City, Oregon. Hey, Susan, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob.
How are you?
Hanging in there.
Backwards skating?
Yeah, I gave that up quite a few years ago when I got old and decrepit. I'd like to go back to your one of your earlier topics.
Okay.
On the history. In the early part of the 19th century, a guy was romping all over Europe, and you and I both know who that was.
Little guy, had digestion problems, kept putting his hand in his coat. Yeah.
And he, in effect, conquered most of the civilized world. And then a bunch of people got together, the English, the Russians, the Prussians, and so on and so forth. And under most circumstances, these people did not get along. But the enemy of my enemy is my friend.
Right, and in the Middle East, they're figuring that out, it has the potential to have dire consequences for us, Susan.
Yeah. Now, what I want to know is, in your opinion, who's Wellington going to be?
Well, I don't know that there is a Wellington.
There's always going to be a Wellington.
Well, is there someone with enough guts to rise up within the military structure of the United States and be Wellington? Is it a question of who will be Wellington? Question of who will be Brutus and Cassius and oh boy, Homeland Security. That's not what I mean. But there's not going to be. I don't think there's going to be a Wellington within the sense that you and I understand it.
No, I don't think it's going to come from the United States. What I'm thinking of is who among the... Can you think of anyone on the planet?
Well, who was the father of the so-called insurgency, Susan? It obviously wasn't Zarqawi.
No.
Is it the little pudgy dude with the beard? The Al-Sot, is it Sadr?
I have a feeling that
is he Iran's Ho Chi Minh or Iraq's Ho Chi Minh?
No, the thing that distinguished the successful generals were their abilities to be utterly cold and calculating. These religious fanatics, they're great for cannon fodder. They die real well.
Yeah, and the problem we've got...
all that great of planning.
Well, it's a different kind of war, though. I mean, you can't, Leonidas standing in the hot gates with his 300 is not the kind of war we're fighting now. And the problem is that, you talk about what makes a good general or what makes a good military leader. Unfortunately, we've gotten to the place in the United States where what makes a good general and a good military leader is a profound ability to suck up and kiss ass.
Yeah.
I mean, is there any doubt in your mind or anybody else's that these guys are at the top of their game in the Pentagon structure because they're great military leaders?
Well, that's why I said it's probably not going to come from the United States because the generals that are in place are incompetent. They're basically brown nosers. If you are a competent military man, you're either dead or you're not in the military.
I wouldn't trust an American general today to put the swirl on the top of a cone of Dairy Queen, okay?
No.
They're not... We've bred it out of ourselves, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Okay, we're doing the history thing again, Susan. See what you do. Where was Ulysses Grant when the Civil War broke out?
Drunk.
No, it was probably that too. But he was a failed harness shop owner, I believe.
Yeah.
Stonewall Jackson was teaching at the Virginia Military Institute. William Tecumseh Sherman was running a school in Louisiana.
And not very well.
Right. So, you know, but meanwhile we had the general staff. Was, you know, our military was run by a guy who was ancient and practically immobile in the form of General Winfield Scott. We've got, you know, and he was the hero of the Mexican War, but he was nothing when it came to the
right
Civil
there.
War. Yeah. You know, the two most capable generals in the Civil War were deemed to be Albert Sidney Johnston.
Oh, good God.
Well, he was a great one. He was out in California. He left California, came to fight for the South, and wound up bleeding to death in his boot because he was too damn noble to call a doctor at Shiloh.
Yeah.
And Robert E. Lee.
Yeah, Robert E. Lee, who fought for the South. But the thing is, the North almost lost the entire war because how long did it take Lincoln to get a competent general?
Eons.
Yeah.
I mean, what was it? Was it George Gordon Meade who was in charge at Gettysburg and more or less won by default?
Yeah. McClellan, he couldn't get McClellan to move.
Right. And when they finally got around to criticizing Ulysses Grant for being a drunk, Lincoln just looked at him and said, "You know, he fights."
Yeah.
But you know, your ultimate question, is there a Wellington? Will there be a Wellington? What will he look like? You know, maybe it's not Wellington we ought to be looking for. You know, who's the
Grant.
I mean, think down through history, all the people who have harried great armies and made them miserable. You know, we seem to forget so much of our history, Susan. You know, George Washington was not that great a general, historically speaking, with the exception of the boldness that was forced upon him in terms of his Christmas raid on Trenton.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, when you look at Francis Marion in South Carolina...
Yeah, I was thinking of Marion.
Ethan Allen and his Green Mountain Boys.
Uh-huh.
The people who came up out of the Appalachians, crossed the mountains, and won the Battle of Kings Mountain. That's the same kind of... Those are the people we're facing today in Iraq.
And in a way, you could equate our armies with the English during the Revolutionary War, because they insist on wearing those bright red uniforms, lining up in these nice straight lines, and then throwing hissy fits because the colonists insist on fading back into the brush with rugs.
Yeah, they won't fight fair.
That's not fair. Well, it worked.
Well, yeah, maybe fairness kind of goes out the window, doesn't it?
Yeah, maybe we should be, instead of stomping our feet and talking about nukes or carpet bombing, we should be saying, first of all, do we really need this? And secondly, if we really need this, we have to adapt. First law of nature, adapt or die.
Yep. And the sad thing is These suck ups and the ass kissers who become generals are busily putting together a war plan for Iran because they are following orders and it is what they have been told to do. And you know what? It doesn't bode well for us.
I've already informed my congressman, and I urge everyone to do the same. Don't worry about the Senate. This has nothing to do with the Senate. You call up your congressperson. And you say, if this idiot goes into Iraq for any reason, and don't you, how much you want to bet some of those so-called freedom fighters or insurgents are coming over from Iraq, I mean, coming over from Iran, come from Omaha?
Well,
yeah. So you call up your congressperson people. And you say if they go into Iran, then...
Well, even Dennis Kucinich, Susan, Dennis Kucinich said he was not in favor of impeachment, but he said if George Bush invades or attacks Iran, all bets are off.
Yeah, then you impeach him flat out. That's grounds for impeachment right there. Take him out. Because that in and of itself is a war crime. They have done nothing to it. Of course, let's face it, Iraq didn't either.
Nope, Iraq didn't. Oh, Lordy. But, you know, you and Sam Simpson and Phil Restino, you've all got the right idea. Wear your congressional representatives out.
Yeah, get on the phone. They're in your district right now, so you don't have to worry about long-distance phone bills. Get on the phone. Start bugging them. Their offices are open. And while you're at it, after you have given them the message about Iran, tell them to clean up Building 18 in Walter Reed.
Well, absolutely. The Walter Reed stories that are coming out are just horrifying, Susan. And there's one after another after another after another.
Yeah, I have seen things coming out. I've seen pictures of that were taken in concentration camps during World War II that didn't look that bad.
That's, well, it's pathetic.
It's a scathing indictment on our so-called support of the troops that the Republican Party, who runs the Department of Defense, treats these people like crap.
Yep. Susan, thank you so very kindly.
You're more than welcome.
Have
Get on
a great
the phone,
night.
People. Time to do it now.
Yes.
You have a
right.
Day, right?
Bye.
Not Mike.
All right. Well, we're pretty much run up against the end of the program. I don't know where the time goes. Our friend Cindy in Washington did send me a note indicating that apparently. Repairs have begun at Walter Reed. It began today. After a five-page report on the deplorable conditions at Walter Reed, suddenly Building 18 started getting some attention today. Now, that is how journalism is supposed to work. Unfortunately, it doesn't very often. Not anymore. But it was the horror that was engendered by people when the Washington Post did those stories that made those repairs start happening. How long would the Bush administration have continued to ignore those conditions had that not been done? How could you be a part of a journalistic enterprise and see the good that can be done by committed journalism and day after day report on Anna Nicole Smith and Britney Spears' shaved head? And the story that I wanted, and you do know that Tony Blair is pulling out of Britain, or pulling out of, my UK listeners wish he was, is pulling out of Basra. And in one of the great ironic quotes of all time, now, George Bush is sending 20,000-plus Americans to go get chewed up in the Iraqi meat grinder, and the U.K. is saying that there will be 3,000 less of theirs in Basra by the end of the year. Here is the statement from someone named Gordon Jandro, who is the U.S. National Security Council spokesman, and God only knows how he can look himself in the mirror every morning. Gordon Jandro said as follows, "The president is grateful for the support of the British forces in the past and into the future. While the United Kingdom is maintaining a robust force in southern Iraq, we're pleased that conditions in Basra have improved sufficiently that they are able to transition more control to the Iraqis. The United States shares the same goal of turning responsibility over to the Iraqi security forces and reducing the number of American troops in Iraq," Jandro lied. "President Bush sees this as a sign of success
and what is possible for us once we help the Iraqis deal with the sectarian violence in Baghdad. We want to bring our troops home as well.
Johnson lied.
It's the model we want to emulate, to turn over more responsibilities to Iraqis and bring our troops home. That's the goal and always has been.
Interestingly, Basra, if it's so secure, Tony could easily say, hey, look, you know, you're saying you need the manpower. We'll ship the guys up to Al-Anbar province. There's only one problem. The British people would not tolerate it. They're sick of this, and they're willing to stand up and say so. And Tony Blair actually has to listen. So, look, they've got a timetable for withdrawal. I wonder if, you know, is George Bush going to call up Tony and tell him he's helping the terrorists? You know, because the last time we talked, anybody said anything about a timetable in Congress, George Bush stood right up and, you're helping the terrorists when you talk about timetables, because then they'll look at the calendar and see when we're going to leave, and they'll lay low till then, and then they'll start, they'll raise a ruckus. Is he going to tell that to Tony Blair, too? And, of course, the last story, and maybe it's what we'll start off with tomorrow evening. An oh-so-important story. Headline, Court Backs White House on Detainees. Federal Appeals Court today upheld the constitutionality of a new law that strips federal courts of the authority to review the cases of foreign prisoners held by the military at Guantanamo Bay Naval Base in Cuba. Yeah. Now, this is just the Court of Appeals, so that means it's going on up to the Supreme Court. This was the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals. Gosh, who got appointed to the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals? Wasn't it the woman who used to be a Maoist? And now, Janice Rogers Brown. Isn't that the D.C. Circuit? You can correct me. I'm not afraid to be wrong. This is not about my ego. But now this hateful woman sitting on that court is declaring that in America, people don't have a right to challenge why they're imprisoned. I don't think she used to be a Maoist, Sunshine. I think she still is one. Well, that's it. Stick around. Coming up, Jeff Allen Wolf, Wolf on the Air. On the Head On Radio Network, America's liberal voice. Tonight's program was, of course, produced up in the hills and hollers and wilds and wonders of West Virginia by my lovely, talented, darling wife, Agnes. It was engineered by John Fox in Sydney, Australia. Our IT professional is Peter Godbold. Ben Birch is, honest to goodness, the hardest working man in liberal talk. And he proves it at whiterosesociety.org. There's a fundraiser going on. Do the right thing by Ben, because everything you hear streamed on the Head On Radio Network happens because Ben makes it happen. The other group of people who make it all happen are the Mid-Atlantic Regional Council of Carpenters, MARC for short. Every day, those committed, patriotic Americans get up, go out, and they build the American dream. And by supporting this network, they're helping to save the American dream. And always, 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 RMR. It's a... Yeah.
listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network.
You're listening to the Venture 3 Radio Network.
Support for Iraq buildup up slightly. Edwards urges direct talks with Iran. Democrats vow to seek limits on Iraq war. Snow disputes claim that Iraq is a blunder. Bush vows cooperation on health care. Bush compares revolutionary and terror wars. Iran fires missiles in new round of war games. Al-Qaeda chiefs are seen to regain power. Bush expects to return, or rather Rice expects to return to Middle East. U.S.-Iran attack plans revealed. McCain says Rumsfeld was one of the worst. John will say anything to get elected. McCain says Iraq war mismanaged for years. Come on, John, get those votes. McCain says Roe v. Wade should be overturned. Sounding kind of desperate, aren't you, John? McCain makes conflicting statements on abortion. Is John confused or just desperate to get his votes in for the nomination for the Republicans? Russian missile blackmail won't work, checks say. Clinton objects to Confederate flag. And some mole idea over of Senator Bill Clinton. Intriguing, Senator Bill Clinton. These are the issues ahead on the Jeff Allen Wolf Show, starting now.